Plague laws, this is not the first time in history that plague laws have been used to centralize control. Control of transportation, control of labor, control of banking and bank accounts, control of all the different kinds of capital that make up human civilization. But the COVID laws are particularly draconian in the history of plague laws because not only do they control labor, transportation, banking, but now with advances in digital technology, we're looking at complete control through the banking system of 100% of all assets, ultimately. So what happens here? For many, many years, most of us have grown up in a world in the Western democracies where we have a balance of power between the bankers and the people. The central bankers control monetary policy, and the people vote for an electorate that controls fiscal policy. Now what we're watching with COVID laws all around the world is the central bankers moving in and exercising essentially a coup d'etat where they take control of fiscal policy as well. And again, with the advances in digital technology, vaccine passports will not be about health. Vaccine passports are part of a financial transaction control grid that will absolutely end human liberty in the West. For many years, I have fought and written against central control of the financial system. We've centralized more and more capital, more and more control. And we've done it with tactics called divide and conquer. And we've all experienced many different divide and conquer tactics, men against women, black against white. But now we have a new one called the vaccinated versus the non-vaccinated. Because if you're going to centralize control of every aspect of people's lives and literally strip them of their assets and their property rights, you need a new, more venal divide and conquer. And we can't let that happen.
You think about this. I got expelled from Instagram because of vaccine misinformation. But Instagram and Facebook cannot point to one single erroneous statement that I ever made. Everything we post is vetted. It is sourced and cited to government databases or peer-reviewed publications. When they use the term vaccine misinformation, they are using it as a euphemism for any statement that departs from official government policies and pharmaceutical industry profit-taking. It has nothing to do whether it's true or false. It only has to do with what the political implications are. And who is doing this censorship? It's government officials in league with Bill Gates, with Larry Ellison, with Mark Zuckerberg, with Sergey Brin from Google, and with all of these internet titans. They have engineered not only the destruction of our democracy and our civil rights, but they have engineered the biggest shift of wealth in human history. $3.8 trillion from working people to these handful of billionaires, many of them from Silicon Valley. This pandemic has impoverished the world and created 500 new billionaires. And those are the people who are strip mining our economies and making themselves rich. And is it a coincidence that these are the same people who are censoring criticism of the government policies that are bringing them trillions of dollars? People aren't stupid. We can see what's happening. We can ask the question, cui bono? And the answer is the people who are benefiting are the people who are squeezing away our constitutional rights and engineering the destruction of democracy worldwide.
Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours.
Monday, November 15th, 2021. Thank you for joining me today. Got a great show planned for you today. Some really important follow-ups. Most importantly, right out early in the show today, we're going to be discussing the rapid release from the British Medical Journal, the follow-up to the very important research article that came out from the British Medical Journal by Paul Thacker discussing Brooke Jackson and the information she divulged about the Pfizer trial and the efficacy of the data, which British Medical Journal vetted over the process of multiple months and has a lot of evidence to back up what they're saying that is now being debunked by fact checkers. But wait a minute, did the mainstream media even talk about that story? They're acting like it doesn't exist, yet quietly debunking it over here while they get their narrative in order. Of course, that's my opinion. But we'll go into the data yet again and let you see what the British Medical Journal, one of the most highly regarded scientific publications out there, is saying about what they're trying to claim around this story. There's a lot more coming around that topic. Now, we're also going to be discussing some important things around narratives that we've already talked about many times, one of which is going to be the VAERS data. Steve Kirsch doing a great job on this information, breaking down stuff that you didn't see before, showing you the real picture that they keep trying to hide. On top of that, he also does an article around the collapsing athlete topic and continues to show you this is not something that can be dismissed. It is unequivocal. There is a 60, I believe the number he's claiming is a 60 times increase, 60 times in pro sports adverse events since the vaccines began. There's no possible explanation other than really the best way to say it is there's something that has happened in the same exact time frame since the injection has began that has increased the adverse events since we've never seen before in pro sports by 60 times. Now, sure, could it be some other thing that we haven't taken notice of? Sure, it's possible. But why isn't anybody asking the question about the one thing we all know changed in this time frame that is leading to the exact same side effect or effect that we are seeing that they're dismissing? Yeah, it can cause heart attacks. It can cause myocarditis. But we can't prove that those are those over there. 60 times increase. We'll talk about this and show you the reality of how stark and obvious this is. No one's asking these questions other than people like Steve, myself, the independent media, and others out there just interested in finding the truth. Now, we're also going to talk about how that leads into the conversation of things like myocarditis, heart disease, stroke, heart attack, blood clots, and how all of that is being aggressively covered up around anything they can throw at it. Oh, cannabis can cause heart attacks, except it's a very small percentage they're talking about, even what they can prove, which I still disagree with. It's a different topic. But it doesn't account for the whole picture that Steve is talking about. Yet they're arguing that's why, you know, the real point to say to throw out there is why would they be creating all of these extra narratives around what could be causing heart attacks and strokes and heart disease instead of focusing on the thing that they admitted can lead to this problem, at least even considering it. The point is the stark reality, they're not even asking the question. It's a foregone conclusion. The thing they just said can cause this problem is not causing that problem. Does that make sense? But now we're seeing this transition into a discussion of things like climate change, which we just talked about in the last show. And now they're even arguing, and they have been, by the way, somebody threw this in front of me. I think I first saw it by Aaron Elizabeth from Health Nut News, who I've interviewed twice in the past, by the way, pointed out that this is happening around climate change, saying climate change is causing children to have heart disease. That's what they're actually claiming. Now, is it possible? Sure. Is there connections you could make? Yes. But how about we recognize this rapid increase of myocarditis and heart problems in children that we're puzzled by, except there's an obvious catalyst they're not talking about. Now, there's a lot more we're going to get into today around a bunch of different topics. One important one around the booster, admitting to you that this is going on forever, not hypothetically, not a conspiracy theorist. Bloomberg telling you, guess what, guys, your boosters will be forever. It's going to be endemic. This is going to happen every month, every 6 months, every time. And they're telling you this now. And even though they're admitting it, it will still be considered fake news when presented by people like the independent media. And there's a lot more to get into, a lot more studies we're going to talk about today, revealing information that we've already said that's been dismissed and we were censored for that is now being admitted to, like the Wall Street Journal saying, we think there's a link between myocarditis and the shot. And we're studying that now and acting like it's still undefined. Didn't the CDC already admit that? Yes, it's very confusing, but we'll show you the reality like we always have as we go forward today. Now, let's begin with something that I think is really interesting that Tim Dillon just said around what Whitney Webb has discussed. And this ties into the clips we played in the beginning. By the way, apologize for the 5-minute opening of the clips, but you saw why those were important. Very important what they're saying right there. That was the wrong one. Maybe a little glimpse of what we're going to be doing at the end. But this is something in general that we have been talking about for a long time. From the very beginning of this, in fact. Now, Whitney Webb has been leading the tip of the spear, in my opinion, on this topic. Here's what Tim Dillon had to say. I had Whitney Webb on early in the pandemic, and she said it would be used to restructure the entire economy, where regular people would be told to make do with less while billionaires make insane profits. So far, she's been completely right. 100%. I mean, everything they said in those opening two clips, by the way, with Catherine Austin Fitz, who I'm trying to get on for an interview, and RFK Jr., who I would continue to love to have on the show if he's interested. What they've said, everything you heard in those clips, we have said on the show more than once and verified with scientific data, as both of them have as well, as Whitney Webb has as well. All of it, though, connects with a larger picture that Whitney and I have been trying to paint for people, that it's not just about the injection or just about one thing or the other. Especially Catherine Austin Fitz has been really trying to drive home that this is not even really about health. Health is the tool by which they're achieving this end. It doesn't mean that there aren't things within that topic that will continue to be necessary, but it's much larger than this. Remember Whitney Webb's conversation about the legacy systems and the whole conversation about how they're trying to do this in regard to beating China versus the artificial intelligence race, which to me still more so now as it fleshes out feels more of like an overarching narrative. I continue to think China and the U.S. ultimately the governments are working together in some larger agenda here. It's just my opinion based on the facts. But nonetheless, the argument was, well, we need to get rid of, you know, everybody having their own car because that doesn't work for us. It doesn't matter whether you want that or not. That's what they're going to get rid of. That's one of those legacy systems they're discussing. Now, we can see this happening now. Constantly building everything out in the new direction, which really doesn't benefit any other than the collective, which, by the way, boils down to the elitists and everybody else doing their part. That's what that ultimately sees. And we're seeing it happen right now. Restructure for regular people. And as here, the point is, as Bloomberg's pointing out, suddenly Americans can't spend like they used to. Store shelves are emptying and they can take months to find a car. All this is will COVID or unvaccinated or whatever easy word they want to throw out that's not really backed up by anything. I mean, right now we can see that these shortages, supply chains, to a large degree have been completely, orchestrated, I believe, to a large degree. But I mean, it might be a little bit too specific. At the very least, this has been coaxed, allowed, manipulated. Like we saw them scream about a meat shortage one day into what wasn't really actually a cyber attack on that meat plant. They shut it down themselves, as we found out later. But weirdly enough, the day it happened, we were screaming about meat shortages. Does that make sense? It's impossible that could have happened in one day, but they did it anyway. As this continues, it says we may need to get to gasp, live more like Europeans. That might actually be a bad. So this is where this is all going, and you can see everything happening around this, as Whitney points out, I knew because the Silicon Valley intelligence community Power Nexus made the plan to do this in the U.S. well before COVID-19. Exactly. The foreknowledge. Now, whether you want to, as we've always said, argue that this was created to achieve this end, or rather they just harnessed this thing to achieve this end, either way, sort of, never let a good crisis go to waste concept. But you can read the article she links to here, which is right here entitled Techno Tyranny, How the U.S. National Security State is Using Coronavirus to Fulfill an Orwellian Vision, which was originally posted on The Last American Vagabond. And here's that on The Last American Vagabond. Techno Tyranny, How the U.S. National Security State is Using Coronavirus to Fulfill an Orwellian Vision. This is the plan, guys. You can make the decision about whether this was the plan to create this to get there or they just harnessed it. Doesn't matter, really. I mean, it matters, but at the end of the day, we're going there. We are going full speed ahead towards this Orwellian vision, the digital gulag, everything we keep talking to you about. It's just a matter of whether you're willing to recognize that they've always been trying to do these things. The things that the media and the Twitterverse are screaming are fake news are easily verifiable things that they've been openly discussing for 20 years. Think about how ridiculous that is, that we can scream about, for instance, saying, look at them putting chemtrails, fake news, you tinfoil hat wearers, which people will still say, by the way, even though they are openly committing to doing, they're admitting to doing so to fight climate change. It's been multiple years since, Brennan stood up and admitted this, since multiple people said this, since Harvard's been conducting its campaign to spray aluminum barium in the air to reflect and stop climate change. So the narrative goes, regardless, the point is, yes, that's exactly what we'd been saying had been happening for 20 years and way longer than that. But it's fake news right up until they go, yeah, yeah, it's not really, but we're doing it for this reason. So they're still wrong. We never tried to argue a reason. Well, some people argued a reason, but the bottom line was it was happening. Same thing here, guys. We need to start paying attention. And here's the clip that I'm actually going to pause on. I'm going to play it again later in the show. It's important to hear. But the reality of what she's saying here, this is a means to an end. They're using this to achieve this end, which will be ultimate control. And this speaks to the concept that I keep discussing about vaccine passports, about how they're using this to create the infrastructure that you will then have to be a part of. And this is going to eventually lead to this sidestepping of, well, natural immunity, well, religious exemptions, we'll let you take those like we won something. But in reality, it's driving you into the same control structure that will go forward, whether it's about climate change, whether it's about virus, whether it's about whatever thing they want to fearmonger about tomorrow. And that's what she has been studying, this very, very intelligent person, and writing about and discussing for a long time. It's time to start paying attention. Now, on that same note, to do a quick couple comments on foreign policy, but recognize the crossover here. If you don't realize the Israeli government if you don't realize that they have a leading role in what's happening today, then you're just not paying attention. Israeli spyware used to target phones of journalists and activists, investigation finds. Right now, if you're not seeing it yet, think about it for a second on the crossover, what we're discussing here. We're discussing a technocratic future that's building things out using vaccine passports and control choke points to make sure they know where people are and what they're doing and their social credit score and how this is all going forward, which we'll talk about something we just probably in the next show about vaccines and patents for specific social credit crossovers with vaccination passports and how this is all going to work. There's already patents for this stuff. But this is the crossover. So as we see this happening, as we have Pfizer calling Israel the world's lab, and now they're applying all this stuff, including the wearable conversation or the passport conversation, the digital ID conversation. This is all happening in real time in Israel right now. They were the first ones to do the third booster, the fourth booster. You're not vaccinated until you get the third booster. This is all leading in that direction. And so when we see them, they're getting caught for, this is in July, by the way, in 2021, for using your spyware to target journalists, recognize that this is not just about health. It's about using these things to achieve this end. And Israel's government, along with the U.S. government and a lot of others, have been trying to achieve this end for a long time. Now, on that note, Sarah Abdallah points out, you know, we live in a frightening world when the U.S. military gets away with massacring 70 civilians in Syria. If you didn't know that happened, if you haven't heard about that, ask yourself why or how in the world that's possible. While truth teller Julian Assange is dying in a maximum security prison for daring to expose U.S. war crimes. That is the world we live in right now. There's no confusing that. If you want to argue that we killed 70 civilians for freedom, then you have a problem, because that's not what's going on over there, especially since we're illegally still occupying this country, despite whatever narrative they want to spin for you, continuing to murder people for no reason, continuing to steal and siphon off resources and burn wheat fields of the very civilians they claim they're fighting for. That's the reality of the world you live in. It is time to see the truth of what's going on in your name around the world, especially if you're an American. Now, to bring this back into the context of the first discussion, as we just actually discussed in the last show, in case you missed it, Israel holds national drill to prepare for lethal Omega COVID-19 variant. Right, they held a drill called Omega, and now I'm blanking on it. I just discussed it in the last show, Omega something. And the drill was specifically tailored towards, and this is an event 201. This is a Crimson Contagion. This is a dark winter type drill. That's what this is. So recognize the concern. And they're holding this specifically around what's coming next. So this isn't even like some opaque, like we're doing this for the future for who knows when. This is like, it's coming tomorrow and we're doing a drill right now. That is a little hyper intense. That's faster than we usually see these things. But Omega variant is the next one. And they're telling you it's going to be bad. It's going to be bad. So what do you know? It's probably going to be bad. Now, is that because it's actually bad or because that's what they're telling you it's going to be? I'm asking. It's up to you to decide. The reality is that just because they're coaxing you into this narrative, setting the stage, predictive programming, we shouldn't just fall right into what they're doing. Remember the Delta variant? The argument there is that it was super dangerous and super deadly, and they've never, ever even come around to saying anything more than more transmissible. You know why? Because it's not more deadly. In fact, it's obviously far less deadly. It is more transmissible, at least for the narrative goes, and at least how it looks. But so why do they leave that alone then? Because what that hides or what that reveals is that that's why we see the decrease in general, that the act is making something, having something work. But what we're seeing around that is the increase dramatically of vaccine effects, which they call side effects, that are hurting people, long-term things that are being blamed as COVID or long haul, or we'll get into all this today. This is setting the stage. And here's the WHO going, go, another virus concern for the United States, the Nipah virus. Watch out, it's coming your way. Just for no reason. Something that affected one person in India, something that has a very low transmissibility rate, but it's super, super fatal. But they just want to make sure you're thinking about it, because that makes sense, right? Just be scared about things that don't affect you in this moment during a pandemic, because that totally makes sense, right? This is just about keeping you in this mindset. That's my opinion, obviously. Either way, this is the future, how this is going to be used to keep you in a certain state of mind, whether that's politics or from the very, you know, I guess it's all politics coming from the world government apparatus that appears to be building with the WHO and the World Economic Forum. But bringing this over into the concept of the information around the injections they're using to drive all of that forward. We already talked about this trial, or specifically the regional director blowing the whistle on the vaccine trial and the data and how efficacious it was, how valid it was. We reported this on the 2nd of November, right when this came out, the day this came out. Quote, it's a crazy mess, she said. Regional director blows whistle on the Pfizer vaccine trial data. Now, since then, we've seen a few other people in the independent-ish media begin to talk about this about a week after that, and start to talk about it and point it out, which is getting a little more reach, which is good. But what you'll notice is the mainstream media, rather the corporate media, has just completely missed it. Because, you know, they're so good at their jobs. They must have just missed this in their extensive due diligence around the, yeah, we're all, I can't even keep that sentence going. They completely ignored this aggressively and are pretending like it's not happening. Like, I mean, again, it's like juvenile stuff. Right? Like, at very least, you could cover it and argue why you don't think, but no, they just black it out because there really is not much to say about this. So they leave it to the meek and childish ones of the group, which are things like the lead stories group. Remember that one that I laughed about for fact checking one of my articles, even though they barely even read the title and they argued I was saying something I wasn't. And I'm like, good job, fact checkers. Couldn't even read through a title without jumping into your own narrative because that's what these people do. Anyway, before we get to that, here is what we're going to talk about today. A rapid response from the British Medical Journal in response to the, I guess, interestingly, the lack of coverage from mainstream media, but the simultaneous disparaging of this information, right? So I just want us to take a quick beat and recognize how obvious that is, right? So what are we talking about here? We're talking about an information or a study, an article, a research article that's discussing information put out by a whistleblower who had inside knowledge by the British Medical Journal who had vetted this. There, I mean, he doesn't get much more reportable than that. Now, you could say you have problems with it. Say I disagree with this part or that part, but to just blanket ignore this from left to right to the reality that they're both fake news, all of the two-party paradigm media legacy people out there just blatantly ignored it. Now, how does that work into the narrative of, you know, the Republicans are fighting against this whole thing? Why would they ignore that? Why would Rand Paul ignore that? Why wouldn't they talk about something like this? It's pretty revealing. Now, certainly you could argue that they're all just completely out of the know and have no idea about this stuff until people like us put it in front of them, which is sort of what we're always kind of arguing, that they think they're in the know, but they're not really. At the end of the day, the fact is that they just blatantly ignored this. Congress, the media, everybody. And yet simultaneously, we've got groups like Lead Stories fact-checking this thing, which means they know about it. That's the Facebook-powered fact-checker. They know about this. And simultaneously, they've got other people out there in lead positions like undermining this and people all the way at the top of this information, like people in the health spheres and media spheres commenting on Twitter and saying this isn't accurate or being quoted by Lead Stories and saying that this wasn't done well. So why didn't they cover it and say that? Why didn't they put it out in the mainstream media? Because they don't want you knowing this is there while trying to undermine it as best they can. I mean, there's really no way to misunderstand that. I think that's really, really valid that they're just completely blanking it out. Now, here, before we get into this, researcher blows the whistle on integrity data and the follow-up they have about it. It'll make a little bit more sense to read at least one part of what they're trying to say against it. Let's just be clear. Paul Thacker, who is the investigative journalist on this story, Peter Doshi, who is the British Medical Journal's senior editor, or the regional director, Brooke Jackson herself, who's the whistleblower. Every one of them have more credibility than lead stories. This is a very partisan, very obviously politically driven, Facebook-powered fact checker who has been flagrantly wrong more times than I can count, including when they just embarrassingly tried to make an argument around one of my articles when they clearly didn't even read it. So just recognizing how silly it is to compare what Lead Stories has to say against the British Medical Journal is just kind of comical to me. But here's what it says. Fact check. The British Medical Journal did not reveal disqualifying and... Good God. Great. There's a typo in their title. That's just solid work. The British Medical Journal did not reveal disqualifying and ignored reports of flaws in Pfizer COVID trial. Did not reveal disqualifying... Nothing. And ignored reports. I didn't even pick up on that when I first saw it. I mean, that shouldn't matter. Look at the data. But good God, guys, these are the fact checkers and you can't even, you missed a word in your title. You're tripping all over yourself to say fake news before you can't even get your nonsense out. But it says, did the British Medical Journal's news blog reveal flaws that disqualify the results of a contractor's field testing of Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine, and were the problems ignored by the FDA and Pfizer? No. Well, that's quick. That's not true, they say. Well, guess what? Pfizer and the FDA were made aware of the allegations about the contractor in 2020. Well, yeah, that was because of Brooke Jackson, by the way. Great job, guys. We'll get to that in 1 second. Medical experts say the claims aren't serious enough to discredit the data. What medical experts? Probably Pfizer's, because that's how this tends to work. Or Facebook's, because we know how educated they are. At the end of the day, we have spoken to a lot of medical experts who are very clearly concerned about what this tends to, what this shows you, including the medical experts at the British Medical Journal. You realize how silly this is? Like, they're just trying to pretend like they're actually trying to slowly push BMJ into some sort of conspiracy circle. It's ridiculous. I mean, Peter Doshi is one of the most highly regarded people in his field, and we are watching this sham of a group try to make it out to be that these experts aren't experts. The FDA says its position is unchanged, that basically, shocker, shocker, the benefits of the injection outweigh the rare side effects. And the data is solid. Of course they would say that. Whether, let's be clear, whether or not that was the truth, Pfizer, who has $4.6 billion in crimes that they paid out for, 71 crimes on adverse events, lying about safety data, lying to governments, manipulating results, all of this has been verified and have been paid out for, but let's trust them because they would tell us the truth now, of course, right? But a couple points down here. The Twitter user purports to be Ventavia's whistleblower. Purports? I mean, aren't you the fact checkers? Just so you know, guys, I've already figured this out. I've already figured out that I've already vetted this myself. Because I mean, regardless, the point is that they're unable to figure out whether that's her. It is her, by the way. But this is the level, because the point is they would rather you go, it might not even be her, and leave it up in the air. But that's your job, fact checker. So the point is they don't even try to look into the facts, or rather they find them and they omit them in areas where it doesn't work for their narrative. Who purports to be Brooke Jackson, in a phone interview with Lead Stories, said that she's still employed by clinical trial auditing, but is not using her real name and is not using her personal phone in a fear of retribution. Which, by the way, I'll leave this alone for a minute. She said she holds a certificate in clinical trial auditing from this location. She said that she's fully vaccinated and is not an anti-vax activist, which is funny because this is the truth. And what goes on to say is what she basically that they say, despite that she doesn't. Well, I'll read it to you. It says, my story is not about whether the vaccine is efficacious. I'm talking about data integrity. Right. That's what she told them, as they pretended to be somebody else. Responding to comments and inquiries on Twitter, Jackson wrote, the organizational failures listed in the BMJ, although not exhaustive, led to violations that were repeated and deliberate, and the reliability and integrity of the data have been compromised. So it says her Twitter account includes recent posts about the BMJ report, as well as others that, guess what, guys, support some elements of vaccine resistance. So she's lying. That's what they're doing. Can you prove that? Well, no. And what does it mean, vaccine resistance? How about we can recognize that she's concerned about what's currently happening with these, if that's what you're arguing, because the data is not reliable. But anyone and anywhere in any context that even remotely starts to look like vaccine resistant is a fake news anti-conspiracy, or excuse me, fake news anti-vaccine conspiracy theorist that's dangerous. And you see where this goes? How ridiculous is that? These are supposed to be the fact checkers, and they're throwing out subjective claims about what her posts send. I mean, look, that bothers me. It should bother you, because these are the people that are driving people's information. Clicking on a document, it appears to be an internal Ventavia email welcoming Brooke Jackson and adding to the team to working on Pfizer's trial. Of course, they leave this to the very end of the article. Well, that's notable. Why? Because Ventavia said she was not part of the team. So in their own research, they find out that Ventavia lied about whether or not she's on their team. And that's not enough to recognize that they might lie to you about stuff, but just take their word for it. Great fact checkers. Now, what's frustrating to me on top of all of it was the last part where they say on Twitter, Jackson does not express on Twitter, Jackson does not express unreserved support for COVID vaccines. If you can even write that kind of a sentence and call yourself a fact checker, you should be embarrassed. So she doesn't express unreserved support, which, by the way, implies support, right? It's not unreserved, but there's still support. So she's supporting this, but not doing jumping jacks and screaming about the virtues of everything everywhere, and therefore she's a secret anti-vaxxer. Wow. I mean, really? Okay. So we've very clearly established more than once what a ridiculous outlet this is, in my opinion. But at the very least, what they're saying here is not even bad. It's just simply wrong. And I don't argue, they're lying to you. Now, here's why. Here's the British Medical Journal, who hands down, unequivocally, has exponentially more credibility than a Facebook fact checker. This is from the head of journalism at the BMJ. So let's make sure we're understanding that the British Medical Journal is doubling down on the facts here. Here's what it says. In September, Brooke Jackson contacted the British Medical Journal about problems she had encountered while employed at Ventavia Research Group. The British Medical Journal commissioned freelance investigative reporter Paul Thacker to write up the story. The resulting article, which is linked in the bottom, was subject to the British Medical Journal's usually high-level editorial oversight and review. After publication, the British Medical Journal wrote to Ventavia, Pfizer, and the FDA to better clarify the scope and implications of the problems identified, as well as what corrective measures were taken. To date, Ventavia has not responded to the British Medical Journal's repeated requests for information. But wait a minute. Here's lead stories blatantly telling you that Ventavia didn't even look at these people at the BMJ. They didn't even reach out to Ventavia. That's what they're saying. They didn't even reach out for comments. So how could they possibly know? Well, guess what, guys? People like the British Medical Journal will prove that you're lying. But it won't matter because they'll skip right past it. The lead stories will just bury this somewhere and you'll never really know that they blatantly lied. Or at the very least, blindly took the claims of Ventavia in their fact check without actually finding out if they're true. They very clearly reached out to them because the British Medical Journal, first of all, is claiming that they did. And very clearly would have done so because that is due diligence. And by the way, I know that they did. Now, however, in statements to other media outlets, Ventavia has claimed that its former employee Jackson did not work on Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine trial, which is also a lie. The claim is not true. So there's multiple lies in lead story alone, just so you know, and hopefully they get legally held accountable for their lies. That's not true. The claim is not true. Jackson has contacted media organizations that have published these false allegations, sharing documentation that shows her work on the trial, and asked for corrections. At the time of writing, MedPage Today was the only one that updated it, and we'll look at this in a second. The rest of them just said nothing. She's giving them the proof that they're wrong, and they leave it there. You just really can't get much more clear evidence than that. And recognize the clear proof here is that MedPage has already corrected it. And the rest of them don't, including the garbage lead stories. Now, here's what it goes on to say. During the course of this investigation, Jackson has provided the British Medical Journal with dozens of documents, photos, audio recordings, emails, These include evidence of her involvement in the clinical trial and communications in which senior Ventavi employees discussed concerns that the FDA might show up at their clinical sites. These records were reviewed by the British Medical Journal's editors, and the story was externally peer-reviewed before publication, right? This is what it looks like to do your due diligence. And this is why I'm glad the British Medical Journal is sticking to its guns, because it seems like they're committed, and I hope this burns down the narrative. I hope people like Lead Stories get dragged through the mud, because they deserve to be, because they are liars that are completely towing a line, and they don't even care about the facts, and they're supposed to be the fact checkers. This is going to come out. Their peer-reviewed external investigation, that's what's going to come out, along with all of the data that Brooke Jackson has to back everything up she's saying. At the time of Jackson's complaint to the FDA, Ventavia had already enrolled more than 1,000 participants across its 3 clinical trial sites, and this was actively enrolling participants. Among the full trial's 44,000 participants, the total number recruited by Ventavia is still unknown. Transparency, right? Another former Ventavia employee has told the BMJ that Ventavia ultimately recruited many more participants to Pfizer's clinical trial than those reported to the FDA by Jackson, which you could argue, this is my thought on it, there's in many ways that could be used to manipulate the total, getting rid of people that have bad reactions early on, which we already know happens. Happened. We've proven this. Where people would have one shot and have an early immediate reaction, and they argue that, oh, it happened so soon, it was not connected, right? One day in, they have some massive heart problem. They go, well, it must be from something else, and they kick them out of the trial. So that happened 100% to some degree in most of these trials. So here, when we can see that there's an unknown number, if that was 50,000, 60,000, 100,000, and all they did was pick out the 44 that worked best for them, and it still had problems in it, what does that show you? Just hypothetical, my thoughts. Now it says, neither Pfizer nor Ventavia will respond to questions from the BMJ to help clarify the matter. Right, so here's Lead Stories again saying, but they're not responding. They didn't even reach out. They're lying to you, or taking at face value the claims of people that are on their side. Pfizer responded to the British Medical Journal, stating that it had received an anonymous complaint about Ventavia in September 2020. Quote, actions were taken to correct and remediate where necessary. Pfizer's investigation did not identify any issues or concerns that would invalidate the data or jeopardize integrity of the study, they say. Now, Pfizer added the FDA and the study's institutional review board were, quote, proactively notified. Pfizer did not clarify whether it was Pfizer or Ventavia that notified the FDA and the IRB. Now, remember, this time frame is exactly when Brooke Jackson was reaching out to notify them of this problem, and exactly when it seemed that nothing had happened going forward after that. Pfizer did not respond to the questions of whether the data from the Ventavia sites were incorporated into the trial safety and efficacy analyses, right? So if this was an issue, and if there was a problem with this, which she can prove, if that data was used to push out their end result, then it's not valid. The British Medical Journal also posed several questions to the FDA, including why it has failed to inspect any of Ventavia's sites following Jackson's report, and whether the agency had received other complaints about the conduct of the Pfizer trial. An FDA spokesperson responded that the agency cannot comment further, as it's an ongoing matter. Of course, FDA has full confidence, they say, in the data that were used to support the Pfizer-BioNTech COVID-19 vaccine authorization and the Comirnaty approval. Of course they do. Because Pfizer would say that, as they have lied about things many times, if they were lying about this now, which the data seems to suggest they are. But the history shows that Pfizer would blatantly lie through its teeth to achieve their goals. It's very clear. That's not my opinion. That is 100% fact based on what they've done before. You want to peruse it for yourself? Feel free. $4.6 billion in crimes, 71 different crimes for exactly the kind of things we're dealing with. This is Pfizer specifically, just from 2000. Safety adverse events, or safety events, lying about safety, lying about adverse events, lying about long-term effects, lying about government involvement, lying about anything, paying off government officials, caught, paid out, crimes. Well, let's trust them today, right? Here's MedPage today. Experts blow whistle on alleged COVID vaccine whistleblower claims. Now here, this article was written right away and was updated to reflect the truth about what went on in regard to her working there. Now, this I'm going to read just a couple parts of this. It says, quote, it's all this sort of vague hand kind of hand waving in regard to what she had to say. Like, you realize that if this came out on, like, for instance, if this was, let's just pick another outlet, like Nature or The Lancet, and it came out and it was about a positive story in regard to the injection, right? Proving that this worked, but let's just say it was a super contentious claim, but it proved it worked the way they said it would. Do you think we would see this kind of pushback? I mean, it's an obvious question, obvious answer. What they're saying here is, I have no idea whether any of this is true, nor do you. Paul Offit says, oh, remember his name? That's right. He's the recurring name that pops up to say fake news. That's not true. I think this is safe. The same old rigmarole that we hear from all of them. He's a member of the FDA's Vaccines and Related Biological Products Advisory Committee. You know, the ones that keep pushing forward injections for children, even though they don't need it, even though they're not at risk, and even though there's lots of side effects. But we'll listen to this guy. My point is that he's going, it's all this vague hand waving. Well, the British Medical Journal vetted this. That's the point. Right? So they're the ones putting their credibility around the story, and you're supposed to be at least look at this assuming that they would put their name on it because the story is true. Not that you would assume it's true. Be skeptical. Walk away going, well, they say it's true, but this isn't some fringe little corner website. So my point again is if they had come out and said the opposite, they wouldn't have questioned it for a second. They would have been like, of course, because we agree with that. So why is it not valid until Mr. Paul Offit gets the data in his hand? Or gets the proof and the whistleblower's information in his hand? Because it's what they don't want to consider. Now, again, I'm not saying you should blindly take at face value the claims of BMJ just because they say it, but to dismiss it without seeing the things. I mean, this is like saying with Julian Assange that we're going to, I mean, there's a lot of different narratives or arguments you could spin in, but it's very obvious they would take a different action if it was on a different side of this narrative. Now, it says the BMJ article said Jackson, quote, a trained clinical trial auditor with 15 years of experience, quote, has provided the BMJ with dozens of internal company documents. Again, by my point, photos, audio recordings, emails. So Paul's going, we don't know if they exist. That's what he's saying. He's calling into question the credibility of the BMJ. Would he do that if it was saying the vaccine was the best thing since sliced bread? Of course not. Why not? Either their credibility counts or it doesn't. You don't get to say it doesn't count the moment they say something you disagree with. That's what's happening. A doctor is the most trusted expert of all time and a hero right up until he goes, I don't know about the safety effects here. Oh, you're a fake news addict. You know, you see where it goes. Conspiracy theorist, run him out of town. One thing. It's all about narrative. Quote, one photo showed needles discarded in a plastic biohazard bag instead of a Sharps container box. Now, they would say, well, that doesn't prove the efficacy. These things show a level of negligence that speak to a larger discussion, but there's provable fact, there's verifiable proof in what she's showing them. Another showed vaccine packaging materials with trial participants' identification numbers written on them left out in the open, potentially unblinding participants, and that's a huge one. Not only does that violate HIPAA laws, but it also creates a situation where people know they're not or are injected. They placebo or not. It unblinds the data. If that is true, then it should be completely invalidated. BMJ is saying 100% true. We've seen the documentation. Asked for a response, Ventavia spokeswoman Lauren Foreman discredited the BMJ article. Based on what? Based on her opinion. Written by investigative journalist Paul Thacker. She said Thacker's article did not include any of the evidence the accuser claimed she had, and that he did not contact Ventavia for response before publishing, which is a lie, right? So they did reach out to all of them, and they can prove that. So here we are having them lie again through their teeth. Now, why would Ventavia lie about that if they had all the right on their side? But how do you discredit it if you haven't seen it, right? This is the ridiculous part about it. They haven't. So right now, you don't know for sure. So it's funny how that works for them when they want to in regard to COVID-19 or injections. We don't know for sure. We don't know. But now when you don't know, the same idea, it's fake. But you just said you haven't seen the evidence. So how can you say that it's not true? Because that's the point. That's the narrative. After this article was published, Jackson reached out to MedPage Today, providing a copy of the email showing that she had been hired by Ventavia to be a regional director for the company and would be involved with two sites for the trial. Two sites for the trial. Multiple lies coming out here already, guys. Already. From Lead Stories, this hack of an outlet that's already gotten three things wrong. In a statement, Pfizer said it was disappointed by the recent article published by the British Medical Journal. Of course they would say that failed to contact us. They're all lying, right? I mean, this is embarrassing. Prior to publication, and selectively reported certain claims with the goal of undermining confidence in a vaccine that has been given to hundreds of millions. So ask yourself how the Pfizer could possibly know that they selectively did anything, that they only reported certain claims. How do they know? How do they know what they got? How do they know what they looked at? How do they know what the process was at the BMJ? They don't. That's just a narrative being pushed out because they know it'll be supported by the news and the mainstream media. It's crazy what's happening with this. But more is coming, guys. Trust it. More is coming. This is going to come out and more information will be exposed, revealing that this is that they're lying. So props to the BMJ, Paul Thacker, Peter Doshi, and all of them continuing to stand by it because they know it's right. It continues to show me that these people are doing what they think is right. Now, remember, on top of that, I want to reiterate these things from the last show. Thomas Massie himself, which, by the way, I want him to release this phone call so we can actually confirm this. He says in December 2020, the CDC falsely claimed that Pfizer trial data showed the COVID vaccine was 92% efficacious for those who had evidence of a previous infection, which is not only dangerously wrong, but it also is hiding the fact that that increases your risk of problems. He called them on it, recorded the phone call. They said they were wrong. Still haven't fixed it. He's asking why they've been silent on this claim. Pfizer CEO surely knows that they lied. Lying about the Pfizer trial data. See the connection? But we never spoke. He never spoke up. By the way, Trump was president when this happened. They're lying. On top of this, we know about what they're claiming here is that it was 92% efficacious for those who had evidence of previous infection. We'll get to this more in a second, but remember, that's flagrant. That's the diametric opposite. Injections based on the original strain versus the Delta is causing people to have their bodies attack themselves, causing antibody-dependent enhancement. So says the Journal of Infection peer-reviewed study. On top of that, another peer-reviewed Journal of Infection study says the same thing. Previous COVID infection is associated with increased adverse events. Multiple peer-reviewed studies coming out in 2021 have said this is the last thing you should do. It's dangerous. You could hurt people. But doesn't matter. Because they keep saying it's perfectly safe despite the science, right? The science is saying otherwise, but trust the science. Also, as Robert Malone pointed out, it is the official policy of the U.S. government to lie about safety, vaccine safety and effectiveness. This is Robert Malone, inventor of the mRNA technologies for the injections. So he says, who are you going to believe? Over 13,000 physicians and scientists with integrity from all over the world? Exactly. Or the legacy media that spreads whatever lies and propaganda the U.S. government promotes, right? This is the leading expert on this topic that's been cast as a misinformation spreader. I don't know why that doesn't blow everything out of the water. How does this person who has an entire career, a highly regarded career, who is like the expert on the very technology they're using to drive this thing forward, who comes out and says, that's actually not true, and suddenly he's a purveyor of fake news, he's an anti-science conspiracy theorist, but how do you explain his entire career? How do you explain that you're using the work of an anti-science person to make your injection? Does that make sense? This is how childish this narrative is. It's ridiculous. Now, on top of that, Children's Health Defense has put something out, which I want to call your attention to on November 10th. Action alert. Tell your elected officials to launch an immediate investigation into the FDA's neglect of Pfizer COVID vaccine whistleblower claims and vaccine advisory committee's pharma ties. The neglect of the claims. No one's even looking into this. As the BMJ article said, why haven't they even looked into these locations? Somebody told you there's a problem and all you did was pretend like they lied? Pretty self-serving, isn't it? The main point, Children's Health Defense is now calling upon Congress to investigate the FDA's failure to look into these serious claims of shoddy testing of the Pfizer vaccine. The agency's Vaccines and Related Biological Products Advisory Committee granted the emergency use authorization to the Pfizer's COVID injection for children ages 5 through 11 on October 26, 2021, nearly a year after these safety concerns were known by the FDA. The VRB PAC committee members have extensive ties with the same drug companies that manufacture the vaccines they vote upon, most of them. The CHD president and general counsel Mary Holland said this, quote, it's obvious from their voting record that their allegiance is to pharma and not to the health of our nation's children. The organization also maintains that the threats posed by these vaccines to children's health are significant, considering that the vaccine adverse event reporting system has received 856,919 reports of injuries following COVID vaccination, including 18,078 deaths from mid-December 2020 through October 29th, 2021. Now, we'll get to this in a minute. how they continue to dismiss VAERS as fake news, despite the fact that they openly claim that it's unverified, yet then seemingly simultaneously say that it's all been researched and it's fake news. But if you can't have it be unverified while simultaneously being debunked, you just can't. First of all, we should know by now, verifiably so, proven on the show multiple times, they simply do not have the resources to do it. They've already admitted that they don't do it multiple times. Maddie is a perfect example. Somebody who has still not been responded to. RFK Jr. interviewed them, or at least discussed them. I forget if that's the one he interviewed. She's in a wheelchair. They put down the report on VAERS as a stomach ache. She is still in a wheelchair to this day, and they're telling it's in her head. On top of that, speaking of Robert Malone and the discussion we're having about fake news and misinformation, he just got censored from Twitter. The inventor of the technology being used to make this experimental thing fly off the shelves. God, it's incredible to me that they just censored him off these Facebook and Twitter. Like, how do you rationalize something like that? Are you really going to pretend that he somehow got radicalized by information? Does it suggest that he's not smart enough to think for himself, yet simultaneously invent the technology you're using to change the world? So they say. I mean, come on, guys. It's just crazy that this is a zero-sum game at this point where people have chosen a side. Facts don't seem to matter inside the two-party paradigm right now on all sides. He says, I'm here to share the truth about vaccines. You can Google me. I was recently banned from Facebook and Twitter, so Telegram is currently the best and most secure communications app, so I'll share here, which is not actually the Telegram is, in my opinion, not the best place to be. Everything that they denied me. But first, I would like to ask you to share my channel so many people can share it as possible. He says, in 7 days, I will start sharing secret documents, human trials, and everything Pfizer Inc. has been hiding from the public, which is interesting to me. I would like to ask why that hasn't been released till now. That's a little bit interesting. I'm like, well, you know, if this is like the end all be all, we're all being attacked, that should have come out immediately. But it says, if you have already ready for the truth, or, you know, but I should add, maybe he just got it. Maybe there's something new coming his way. Bottom line is, he's being censored. Now, one thing I wanted to quickly go over before we jump into Steve Kirsch's information about VAERS is about this discussion that I just had around COVID vax-filled plan, or specifically around the pandemic of the injected, around this discussion. Now, I need to make this really clear to do this quickly. Here's some of the comments I got. And rightly, and they're valid comments, but I want to make sure we understand what we're really trying to point out here. As somebody says, when you cover the UK's vaccine surveillance report, you're showing them compare the raw number of deaths, hospitalization, et cetera, between vax and unvax. Shouldn't these comparisons be by percentage? In other words, the document might show 212 unvax deaths compared to 382 vax deaths. But what if that number, for argument's sake, is 212 out of 300 unvax compared to 383 out of 4 million? Okay, first point. That is a misunderstanding of what you're looking at. First of all, what we're actually staring at is not like, here are the total unvaxed out of the total number of unvaxed, or total number of unvaccinated people with deaths from the total number. That's not what this is. This is, as you can see, and this is my fault for, I guess, not explaining this well enough. This is COVID-19 deaths within 28 days of a positive specimen in general between weeks 40 and 43, the total. So when we're looking at this number, let's just take over 80. The total deaths they have in over 80 entirely from those weeks period, and in that week long period, was 1,564 in over 80. Now, in that category, only 157 of them were unvaccinated. Now, sure, it's important to think about the fact that, well, how many of the total people in this category, you know, the country, are unvaccinated? And does that matter? Of course it does. And then conversely, you consider that of the total people over 80 in this three-week period, you have 1,564 total deaths, and 1,358 of them are fully injected. Now, again, are there much more people that are fully vaccinated? Yes. That no one's arguing that. The point, though, is regardless of the breakdown, the percentage, what we need to see is what they're arguing, which is that it's super, super rare, dramatically reduces death and hospitalization. So regardless of what the total is either side of this, if you have the total deaths of 1,564 And you have the vast majority of those deaths happening in the injected fully. There's no way to be confused about what that's showing you. It is showing you that this is not rare. Now, you could get into the comparison on whether you think that the unvaccinated have a higher risk of death than this. And that's not what I'm even trying to argue here. I disagree with that. And I've made that argument in other ways. And I'll probably make it again in the show today. I think the data aggressively shows you that's not true. But just putting that aside, all we're pointing to here is that they are wrong about the argument that this dramatically reduces your risk of hospitalization and death. The data does not even remotely back that up. The vast majority of the categories, pretty much 40 and above, the vast majority of deaths and hospitalizations and cases are on the unvaccinated side, on the vaccinated side. Now, within that number, you can feel free to make the comparison, the breakdown of the percentages and argue whether which one has more risk. But either way, it does not support what they keep trying to say, which then makes it very clear that it's not working the way they say it is. And in fact, should not be forced on anybody, regardless of this. But taking this into account, it's obvious you can't force this on people. I hope that's clear. Now, I want to go back to just one more argument in case there's more here. Was thinking along the same lines, and this person says table 5 and 6 were percentages, but just to be clear, I was only looking at table 4 up to A and B. There's only a table 5. There's not table 6, and this one is not one that we were really engaging with. I do believe this is based on per 100,000. Point is here. Now, this is the comparison you could make in that regard, right? You could look at this and argue that their comparison says, but look, let's just take this for the same point. Right here, it shows you unadjusted rates among persons not vaccinated is 133.7 per 100,000 over 80. Okay, jump over to fully vaccinated. Where was that? Right here. So including the one shot, which again, remember, matters, and you have 52 plus 125 plus 64. Right? You have over 200 clearly. So even right there for anyone who's been injected versus those who have not, over 80, you have a higher rate per 100,000. That's the highest at-risk group. That should be enough right there to show you that point doesn't actually add up. Either way, any one of these, including hospitalizations, clearly show you that it does not back up what they're saying. Last one. This person just adds to it, says, go look at Vermont COVID-19 health dashboard. Since mid-July to late October, the percentage that died fully vaccinated was 72%. So even on top of this, there's other data that shows you this isn't true. Anyway, I hope this is clear. I don't want to waste too much time on this point because there's been a lot of people that said, Ryan, you're not considering the total numbers. I am. That's not what this point was really about. And I hope that's clear. I'm going to continue to point to these as we go forward, week 46 and as it goes forward, because it's unequivocal. At the very least, you have to argue that this is really not any better or worse, regardless of which side of this you're on. If you have the injection, it's clearly creating problems in your body. And that always, bottom line is, you should have a choice. That's it. On top of that, to add to it, Daily Skeptic points out another study from Norway finds zero vaccine effectiveness against death for COVID hospital patients. We've actually already pointed to this. But one of the other data points you can pull from this is, and this is the point we already kind of made. As it says, a new preprint study in Norway looked at the difference in outcomes between vaccinated and unvaccinated hospital patients, has found that being vaccinated makes zero difference to the risk of dying once you're hospitalized. That's what the study found. Now, they'd argue, but the risk is much further, much, much reduced to getting hospitalized. But weren't they already saying the reduced risk for hospitalization and death? Okay, well, this study already proves that's not true. So death is the same. Once you're in the hospital, your death is the same. Well, I guess you could argue that's a little bit different. But regardless, the point is, if you add to that that the hospitalizations are obviously higher in these categories, which is what this is right here, right? Look at the breakdown of just over 80. 1,800 total, only 168 of those hospitalizations were not vaccinated. 1,600 of them were fully vaccinated, regardless of the total categories on either side of that. Clearly, that shows you that the hospitalizations are happening far more in this in the category of the most at risk in people that have the injections. And then you include all these categories. Now, yes, it matters on the percentage of the breakdown when you look at the full sides. But overall, if you have 1,600 hospitalizations and over 80, then you can't pretend that it's rare. You just can't. And then you realize that if the risk for death is the same once they're hospitalized, well, doesn't that seem to suggest the risk would possibly be more for an injected? Well, that's what seems to be panning out with the data, which is what we're going to get into next. Here's Steve Kirsch's newsletter. He's doing a great job on this. He is Executive Director of Vaccine Safety Research Foundation, right? So remember, this is somebody who was very much on the other side of this until he began to be, which again seems to suggest that he is somebody who is honest. I can't know that for sure. But if he changes opinion and is now standing in the line of fire to stand up for the truth, it seems that he realized that this was wrong. And he, as I understand it, he's someone that was injected, somebody that continued to be on one side of it, and is now the very person I keep pointing out on the FDA votes who stands up and says, you're all wrong, this is dangerous, here's the proof, and they continue to ignore him. But whether or not you agree with what he's saying or believe he's somebody you should listen to, the data is all right here, all sourced, all in front of you, all easy to look at. It's very clear, guys. All the links are here. So if you are willing to dismiss this because you don't like his name or he's been, quote, debunked, well, you're not actually deep. You're dismissing the person, not the data. The data is right there for you to look at, and you're ignoring that. That's a conscious choice. Nuvayer's analysis reveals hundreds of serious adverse events that the CDC and FDA never told us about. Now, the CDC and the FDA have said the vaccines are safe and effective. They haven't found any serious issues with the COVID vaccines. Zero. Zip. Nada. It was the DOD that found myocarditis. I recognize that, even though there's a lot of obvious problems that they're pretending they're not there. The evidence in plain sight shows that they are either lying or incompetent, or both, which is what I tend to say, which I agree with. But of course, the medical community is never going to call them on this. So that's where our team of vaccine safety experts comes in, and they are experts, to reveal the truth about what's really going on. In a brand new Vayer's data analysis performed by our friend Albert Benavides, aka Welcome the Eagle 88, we found hundreds of serious adverse events that were completely missed by the CDC that should have been mentioned in the informed consent document that are given to patients. Now, you can confirm this information for yourself. And we found over 200 symptoms that occur at a higher relative rate than myocarditis relative to all previous vaccines over the last 5 years. Altogether, there were over 4,000 Vayer's adverse event codes that were elevated by these vaccines by a factor of 10 or more over baseline that the CDC should have warned people about. Now, guys, this needs to go everywhere. You can look this up for yourself. This is what the safety signals are supposed to do. Now, you could say they're unverified because they're not verifying them, and that's a fair statement. But the point is that just like they did in 2006, in 2009, they have reports of unverified deaths, and 53 was enough to break the whole administration of the injection in 2009. The whole thing. And they weren't verified. They were reports on theirs. Here we have over 18,000 reports of death, and they're going, well, unverified. Well, yeah, we know that. Except the new people don't know that's how it's always been. 4,000 adverse event codes that were elevated by a factor of 10 or more. So these are other adverse events that they're super, super rare, they say, except they're elevated by a factor of 10 or more over the normal. Like myocarditis was grudgingly admitted. Oh yeah, it increases your myocarditis risk by like 19 times, but you know, it's okay. That's there. 200 symptoms at higher relative rate than even myocarditis. Why isn't that told to you? Because they don't want you to know. As of November 1st, 2021, there have been more adverse events reported for the COVID vaccines than for all 70 plus vaccines combined since they started tracking adverse events 30 years ago. That's a stunning statistic. Nobody can deny it, but nobody in the mainstream medical community or the mainstream media seems to care at all. It's not even worth mentioning in passing. Nothing. Now, please go through this tooth and comb. Or is that the... That's weird. It's just that saying. I feel like that's not right. Anyway, just go through this extensively. Look at it. Read it all the way through. Here is just the bottom line follow-up. And please read this all the way through. What the data tells us. Here are a few quick observations from the complete data set. Female reproductive issues top the list. Oh, weird. You know that already because we told you directly from the Pfizer data that showed you, at least what they reported, was an almost 10% reduction in female fertility that they said wasn't enough to report. As I keep saying, you would want to know that, wouldn't you? Of course, the people that don't want to hear it say fake news because that's not what the media says, even though it's right there in the proof on the Pfizer document. says these are strongly elevated by these vaccines. Many of the top symptoms are all related to the menstrual process, which we all know by now, based on all the reports we're seeing that they continue to say, we didn't verify it, so we don't know. It could be a coincidence. Yeah, it could be. But guess what we would be able to find out? You know, guess what would prove whether or not it was coincidence if you guys researched and looked into them? There are an enormous number of cardiovascular and neurological events that are strongly elevated, many of them serious. Fibrin D dimer increased is number 53. We've already talked about that as well. Elevated by a factor of over 400 times. Charles Hoff discovered D dimer was elevated in over 60% of his patients he measured. No one cared. This is very serious as D dimer is a lagging indicator of blood clots, right? Which is what it seems to be leading to. Troponin increased was 100, number 130, elevated by a factor of 205. Troponin indicates heart damage and is elevated to extreme levels, 10-time heart attack levels or more, and can stay elevated for months at a time. Death as a symptom, which they note is pretty unusual coding for death, since it's not really a symptom, which speaks volumes, is number 433 and elevated by 96 times. Death, 96 times. Hardly a safe vaccine, they say. Brain heronation at 405 is elevated by a factor of 100 times over baseline. Cardiac arrest at number 450 is elevated by 93 times. This is when your heart stops. Pulmonary embolism, number 24, is elevated by 954 times the normal rate. 954 times the normal rate. Pulmonary embolism. Gee, I wonder why these people are dropping dead in the middle of games on the field. Crazy. It says this was the cause of death of two of the 14 kids the CDC looked at in their death analysis. Why don't you know that? Because they're not telling you. Mainstream press will never ask them the questions as to why the CDC would not find causality here. They wrote, CDC reviewed 14 reports of death after vaccination. Among the descendants, four were aged 12 to 15 years and 10 were aged 16 to 17. All death reports were reviewed by the CDC physicians. Impressions regarding cause of death were pulmonary embolism. 954 times the normal is hard to explain, isn't it? So no causality? That's hard to explain, so they didn't. They just moved on as if there was nothing to see. You realize that's a quote from them. They regarded this as pulmonary embolism, and they just don't tell people that. All of this is easy to see in the documentation, but the average person who thinks that we're conspiracy theorists won't look at what we point to. Intracranial hemorrhage is at 604 and is elevated by 79 times. Two of the 14 kids from the CDC analysis died from this. Add all these up. Tinnitus, elevated by 105 times. This can be so bad that people can kill themselves from this alone. There are many, many more issues to be concerned with, but I wanted to get, he says he wants to get the list out quickly so there can be more eyes on this. Number 12, he says for months, he's offered to discuss the data and analyses to both the FDA and CDC outside committees, as well as the CDC and FDA themselves, but nobody wanted to see it. Most hit delete on his emails. A few told him to wait for the public comment period, which is what he's been doing, and submit it then. But nobody followed up, nobody cared what he said, and they ignored it all. It's not hard to see what's going on, guys. This is the kind of stuff that's everywhere. Now, of course, and you'd rightly argue that, well, this could be caused by something else. Of course it could. Of course, this could be caused by just a random, you know, seizure or Bell's palsy reaction right after the injection. Of course it could. Or maybe this one. Which we've already shown, by the way. Right. Now, you know, the point is, these things, like the collapsing athlete point, which we'll make a little bit on a second, are impossible to ignore. It is all over the place. And of course, the mob out there will just go at one and say, well, you don't know, it could be this. Well, yeah, you could be. That we don't know. We don't know for sure argument is all they have today. This is everywhere. It's constant. And the reality is that it's possibly being caused by these injections. I think it clearly is. But the point is they've already admitted that it can. So why is the reaction to this to go, you don't know, fake, it's fake news, you're spreading fake news? Why is the reaction to dismiss it out of hand? Does that sound safe? Obviously not. Guess what, though? There's another rare side effect. A serious but rare side effect. Moderna vaccine side effects. EMA assessing reports of a new serious complication. The vaccine's being offered as a booster shot to millions. And it says, although the vaccine's been proven to be overwhelmingly safe, that's not even remotely true, by the way, but they know they need to say that. But I had this highlighted, of course, and it removed it for me. Here it is. The health body says that it's assessing reports of a rare blood condition. Oh, weird. A blood condition. Who didn't see that coming? Known as capillary leak syndrome. Shocking, right? Like that we haven't seen the obvious mRNA complications for everything blood-related, heart-related. Come on. It's ridiculous. And again, as I keep saying over and over and over and over, this is the 1,000th time now. How many rare things do you put in a pile before you recognize that the risk-benefit analysis is obviously slanted? Make it 0.1% for each one. Super, super rare. 0.01, doesn't matter. You take 1,000 of those things and you realize that the actual rate of risk when you put them together is obviously more. Then you realize that the actual risk for even one of these things is way higher than they're telling you, like we are now seeing with myocarditis, like we are now seeing with almost all of these things that they're keeping from your view. Now, here is another interesting conversation that I might not play the whole thing of, but I want you to hear the breakdown because we've already been telling you this from the very beginning. And these things are being grudgingly admitted and proven in real time, despite how often we point this stuff out. I guess not despite, but the fact is that we've been showing you for a long time and the media is only just now admitting this, but still censoring people like us. Spike protein inside nucleus enhancing DNA damage. So just remember, we've already talked about this. SARS spike 2 impairs DNA damage. Further evidence supports controversial claim that SARS-CoV-2 genes can integrate with human DNA. This was on May 2021. But it's fake news if you talk about it anywhere, even though this is on science. Trust the science, except when it's on science and we don't want to hear it, right? Well, listen to what this expert has to say.
Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Michael Arashik of Neurogenomics, once again making an update video on the mRNA vaccines. And today I probably have one of the biggest and wildest news I can share with you when it comes to molecular biology impacted by either COVID-19 or vaccines. Definitely a game changer, so let's get started. Recently, just about a few weeks ago, this was in the first week of October, a research team from Sweden published information that showed...
Hello, everyone.
Studying that the spike protein can actually enter nucleus. And the reason why this is such a dramatic...
Sorry about that. That was super clunky. I apologize for that. I was trying to get this out of the way, and I was just going to pull this up, but I'm going to skip right to where you were, so let me get back on it. This is easier for you guys to hear, so I forgot that I had this.
Dr. Michael Arashik of Neurogenomics, once again making an update video on the mRNA vaccines. And today I probably have... one of the biggest and wildest news I can share with you when it comes to molecular biology impacted by either COVID-19 or vaccines. Definitely a game changer, so let's get started. Recently, just about a few weeks ago, this was in the first week of October, a research team from Sweden published information that showed in their human cells that they were studying that the spike protein can actually enter nucleus. And the reason why this is such a dramatic news and why it's such a game changer is the fact that obviously nucleus houses our genetic material, all of our DNA, almost all of our DNA. Mitochondria is the other place where you might find DNA. And what they also showed, and normally entry into the nucleus is supposed to be forbidden. You're not supposed to be going inside there, precisely because you could potentially be modulating how we're using our genetics.
Exactly.
Now, what did they discover is that once the spike protein enters the nucleus, it actually inhibits proper fixing of broken, damaged DNA. And the specifically damage of DNA where you introduce a double-stranded break, meaning really you break both strands of the DNA, you shear the DNA in half, you break it in half. And the way it does negatively impact how the DNA is being fixed is by somehow, it's still unknown, somehow interfering with how BRCA1 protein is supposed to be used in fixing that DNA damage. Now, BRCA1, if you mutate that gene, it's one of the highest predispositional mutations for cancer development that you can have, is mutations in this particular gene. Precisely.
Think about what he's saying. Like, okay, so if your goal was to make people get cancer and to manipulate their DNA, which we're seeing a million different ways how that's happening in regard to the blood and all different things we've talked about, but you couldn't have made this better if that was your objective. Like he just said, that is specifically about, I mean, we all know that cancer is a massive boon for this industry that has not even remotely been attempted to be, you know, it's interesting. Now you could argue that this is just because they're bad at this, that they failed, that they didn't, maybe that the trial, I mean, there's a million things you could argue for malfeasance, for incompetence. But let's just ask ourselves whether this is something that was made this way. Valid question to ask. Because it's pretty interesting that it leads in this exact direction. Now ask yourself on top of that, if this guy can see this on his own time, you're telling me that all of Pfizer, all of the FDA, all of CDC, all of the government weren't able to? Come on. This means that they're ignoring this information, or that it was part of the plan.
Because BRCA genes code for proteins that are developed, that are involved in fixing DNA damage, such as fixing DNA that's shared in half. So this is clearly news of great significance, and it should not be taken lightly. It should be reinvestigated, reconfirmed, because this could not be real news. No offense to the authors. That's just how science works. There's very frequently information that is discovered and published in science will turn out to be not true.
Exactly, guys. And that applies to all of it. Stuff that we think supports what we're saying and stuff that they push out of the mainstream that supports what they're saying. But the difference is we're objective enough to consider that. The mainstream will just dismiss anything that we have to say that's information that comes from people like Malone or anybody else or new scientists that challenge the narrative while ignoring any flaws in what they want to be the case. I mean, because this is just childish mentality. But the reality has always been that science is completely fallible. The scientific method can be manipulated. They can do it wrong. The point is, that's what I have an interview with Denny Rancourt, who was about to reference. That's why that came out. Denny Rancourt and I are going to discuss his recent study around the illusion that is the COVID-19 pandemic tomorrow, proving that with his scientific research. But as he had said, I almost lost my point there, as he has said in the past, trusting the scientific method. You don't trust science, you trust the scientific method. And then you critique others' use of the scientific method. That's peer review. So the point here is that we're watching them admit that the science is wrong all the time, except the media and the government are saying, trust the science. Pfizer says, don't worry, science has your back. they're treating you like your children. You're much smarter than that. I know that.
Actually, it's very, very common, and that's why you need validation and revalidation before something becomes considered to be of truth, scientific truth.
And consider that in the Pfizer information and how aggressively they rushed out their preliminary information and jammed this in people's arms, and we're only now finding out the real repercussions. That's also what they didn't do, right? They didn't do the normal. They didn't get the actual information. They didn't do the proper trials. They didn't skipped certain parts. I mean, we all saw this. That's also wrong, right? They knew that. They didn't care.
You need a lot and a lot of studies. The other protein that is also somehow prevented from taking its action and helping fix the DNA once the spike protein enters the nucleus is this mysterious protein called 53BP1. It's not fully really known what that protein yet does. That's common for many of the genes in the human genomes. We're still characterizing much of that information. But it's believed that potentially that protein might be involved in binding to the broken ends of the DNA to prevent their religating or reconnecting to DNA from other sources.
Right. So there's an element that's actively stopping it from correcting itself. Is that what it sounds like to me, at the very least? Again, this is why people like Luc Montagnier and different people are saying it's undeniable that there is inserts in this. There is manipulation, that this is a gain of function manipulated entity. Now, you could argue that that in and of itself is a manipulation in this narrative, trying to convince you that this is happening. I'm sure people think that. Regardless, what we have to stand back and see, wherever you are on this argument, they're lying to you. It's the 9/11 analogy I've always used, right? Planes, no planes, you know, in regard to the Pentagon or whatever else, people will die on those disagreements. Meanwhile, the government is happy to let you guys keep arguing with each other while they're happy to not have you point that they were completely responsible and involved with what happened. All right, at the end of the day, I have my opinions like anybody. There's all sorts of different narratives around the 9/11 entire conversation. But what do we know for sure? That obviously, even people that were part of the report, even now the people that were on the ground, the fire chiefs and the police chiefs are all part of it saying, you guys are lying to us. We all know they deceived you on 9/11 to some degree. That's all you really need to recognize, because that's all we can really prove at the moment. They lied to you. They manipulated. They were part of this. They were at the very least aware. So here we are in the same situation. We know that they're aware of this stuff and they're just actively not doing anything about it. We have to see that culpability, but we can argue about differences within this narrative, right? Whether or not I truly believe that whether or not this is actually something that's hurting people, that this has been aggressively overblown, manipulated. This is an illusion. Doesn't mean it's completely fake. It could be. But regardless, they are absolutely lying, like combining pneumonia and influenza with COVID and telling you that as the whole number, like using a highly obvious false positive rate, using over 40 cycle threshold with the PCR test to create an illusion. Those are illusions, just two of many. Now, I'll leave it there and we'll come back to this point. Watch the rest of the video. Very important stuff. But again, think about how ridiculous it is that this came out in Science in May 6th. The evidence is pretty clear. And they just keep saying it's fake and moving forward. I don't know why that counts as trusting the science. I mean, that's just dismissing the science that you don't like. But here's the Star Tribune pointing out that, don't worry, though, the list of all those injuries you keep hearing from people, it's all overblown. It's not real, public officials warn. Now, by the way, I had this thing extensively highlighted and it just keeps refreshing. I tried more than once, so I'm not going to go through it all, which is probably the point, but let's just go to the main points I remember. Public health experts are concerned that unverified reports, right? This is my point. So they're admitting that these are unverified reports. Make sure you don't miss that, which means they have not verified whether or not they're true, right? That's what they love to say. Okay, but if they haven't verified them, they can't also be fake. Experts are concerned that unverified reports to a federal vaccine injury database, which is funny, is it's not a vet, it's the federally run CDC, FDA joint run database that they're supposed to be using. But they want you to think it's just a little small thing, are being misunderstood by the public and exploited by skeptics. But wait a minute, didn't you just say they were unverified? So how are they misunderstood? How are they being exploited if we're only saying, look, there's claims of danger, and they go, no, those are fake, but they're unverified. I've been saying this from the very beginning. You can't have it be unverified and fake at the same time. And it's undermining immunization efforts, and that's really what it comes down to. Can't have vaccine hesitancy, even with the truth. It says the raw data can be startling because the vaccine adverse event reporting system contains 299 reports of Minnesotans dying after COVID-19 vaccination, which, remember, is only 1% of the total, which they'll never tell you in this article. So times it by 10. But most of the claims turn out to be coincidences or unrelated to the shots. Okay, wait a minute. They just said unverified, right? So we don't know. We have not verified whether or not these are what they say they are. And that's why we're concerned, because they're unverified. And then right into the next paragraph. But most of them are fake or coincidence. How do you know that if they're unverified? Fantastic. Quote, I will guarantee you there are not 299 Minnesotans who have died as a result of vaccine, said the director of the Mayo Clinic, with no qualifying things to qualify that statement. I could guarantee you that's not true because I don't want it to be. Why then do you guarantee it? I guess that's good. I guess that's good enough for the Star Tribune, right? Just say what he said. Health officials are pressing unvaccinated people to seek the shots. VAERS is designed as an early warning system to amass enough reports from vaccine manufacturers, doctors, even patients. No, not even all of them. It's always been all of them, to spot clusters of even the rarest side effects. But the reports themselves are not proof of cause and effect. Yeah, exactly. We're all in agreement, except you just don't want to look at them. And we're trying to say, look at the signals that you just admit are supposed to be used as signals. The COVID vaccines, excuse me, the COVID-19 vaccines are the most watched pharmaceuticals in medical history, with the database being part of the federal oversight that includes monitoring by the Defense and Veterans Affairs. The oversight has found rare side effects that you apparently have not verified, including blood clots with the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, particularly younger women, and a form of heart muscle inflammation called myocarditis with the other vaccines. Oh, you mean Pfizer and Moderna? And the other ones, we won't mention their names, particularly in younger men, which is not actually even true. We'll get into that in a second. It's very clearly across the board. It is up to 50 and across, and all, it's everybody. And that's what the data shows, yet they keep pretending it's in young kids. I don't know why. Immediate anaphylactic allergic reactions have been found in 2 to 5 COVID vaccine recipients per million. But you have an entire database of unverified claims that you just said you haven't verified, but we're still citing facts? Which is why people wait 15 minutes, right? Because that makes sense. We only have guys, only 5 per million, because we're just refusing to look at any of these things, but that's why they wait 15 minutes? Because it's 5 in every million? And that's how we know a time frame? Yeah, that makes sense, right? Because that 5 in every million doesn't happen after 16 minutes. Because yeah, that makes sense. I mean, am I crazy? There's zero logic throughout this. This is just dumping the narrative in different connecting points and saying, yeah, it all lines up. You can't crash your car in 45 minutes because there's only 5 in every million. Of course, obviously. However, none of these confirmed incidents has tipped the scales against the U.S. vaccination recommendations. None of these confirmed incidents. Right, so the ones we chose to look into, they haven't done that. So we're already good. But all those other unconfirmed ones are completely coincidence. Now I'm going to skip it all because I don't want to waste all the time on it. But they go, in the U.S., roughly 10,000 people die a day by chance alone. So how do we know they couldn't just have died from that? Who knows? Yes, that 13-year-old who collapsed with a heart problem in the middle of his game before having any issues in his entire life, who knows? It could have just been a chance death from 10,000 who died a day. They've been using that floating narrative since the beginning. But the reality is the sheer rate, which by the way, just of the supports events when we mentioned alone, shows you that's not true. But they don't have an answer for that. So they just don't talk about it, which is what they did with the British Medical Journal. It's what they do with everything else. They just ignore it. But if roughly 10,000 people die a day, it could all be a coincidence. Well, let me ask you a question. Why don't they apply that narrative on the other side of this argument? Of course not. As Slow News Day points out, the difference between conspiracy theory and conspiracy fact, 6 to 12 months. He just says part 5,900, basically an endless string of this exact event. He says, we've talked about this now on, this is Union of the Unwanted, with me on my show, with them on their show, excuse me, and actually with Ricky himself. And the point they're making, a big French study finds most long-haul COVID symptoms not associated with the infection. Oops. And this is a peer-reviewed study. There are more pressing health needs for the $1.1 billion that the NIH will spend on long COVID. Right. That's the ridiculous part of this. They're spending $1.1 billion of your money to research long COVID. Except that's not what's happening. And I've been saying this in the beginning. Look, yet again, add to the pile of things that we're saying to you based on the data in front of us that are just being dismissed as fake news. Here's the study. Yet again, November 8th, 2021, Association of Self-Reported COVID-19 Infection and SARS-CoV-2 Serology Test Results with Persistent Physical Symptoms Among French Adults During COVID-19 Pandemic. The finding is that this is not associated. So we have to consider that with the fact that they're still going to use that. So we're able to say, and I'll read it in one second, we're able to say, well, 10,000 people die a day. So the 18,000 deaths were reported since the beginning of this and the almost over a million adverse events, you know, there's 10,000 people die every day. So could be a coincidence because that doesn't even make sense when you actually take the full breadth of the data. But considering that they're willing to dismiss these very obvious signals in lieu of what they want you to think, meanwhile, they're going, but long haul COVID, children, zero risk, but we don't know how long they could suffer. Well, we haven't even proven that that's happening. And now there's a study proving that it's not happening or suggesting based on the data. Question, are the belief in having had COVID-19 infection and actually having had the infection as verified by SARS-CoV-2 serology testing associated with persistent physical symptoms during the COVID-19 pandemic? Now, what you have to recognize right out of the gate that they won't admit to you on the news is that a lot of people thought they had COVID because they had the flu and were told they had COVID, and they didn't, because that got disappeared. Flu, pneumonia, right? As Danny Rancourt points out, there's a pneumonia pandemic. We wouldn't call it a pandemic. Maybe an epidemic. Pneumonia was rampant throughout this country during the time they were saying COVID-19 was happening. That was blended into COVID-19. And he can prove it, and he did. And we'll talk about it tomorrow, and I've already talked about it myself. So people who thought they had it are people going, we have long-haul COVID, because these are people that are being suggestively pushed into this, right? I asked this from the very beginning. Is there I'm blanking on the term, psychosomatic part of this? There always is. Even after flu, they talk about this kind of a thing. But so here's what they find. In this cross-sectional analysis of 26,823 adults from the population-based French Constances, probably mispronouncing it, cohort, during the COVID-19 pandemic, self-reported COVID-19 infection, which they're probably using to add to the numbers, even though they have no way of proving it, was associated with most persistent physical symptoms. So those that claimed they had COVID are all the ones saying they have long haul. Whereas those they proved had COVID was associated with only loss of taste and smell, which, by the way, happens with the flu. Those associations were independent from self-rated health or depressive symptoms, meaning findings suggest that persistent physical symptoms after COVID-19, being called long-haul COVID, should not be automatically ascribed to SARS-CoV-2. A complete medical evaluation may be needed to prevent erroneously attributing symptoms to the virus. Yeah, shocking. But regardless of being on JAMA Network, regardless of being on a highly regarded publication that is peer-reviewed and has all the data in the right place, they'll ignore this because it doesn't go along with what they want. I mean, that is a very obvious reality that has happened from the very beginning of this. They're telling you, at the very least, that it's questionable. Look, it's questionable that what they're claiming is true. More than that, it's very obvious that at the very least, this is calling into question whether COVID-19 long haul even exists. Period. So right now, with this current up-to-date, most up-to-date science, we should be going long haul is unverified, but they won't. They'll be going long hauls there until we prove it's not. And that's how it works for them in this narrative. On the other side of things, what we say is fake until we prove that it's true. It's a joke. This is absurd, and it errs on the side of what they want you to believe. Long haul COVID is based on the data in front of us, does not seem to be valid. Yet they will continue to claim it is. On the other side of this, almost 1 million adverse events, but hey, 10,000 people die every day. It's a coincidence. Possible. We don't know for sure. It's pretty simple how that works, right? Now, bringing this over into the collapsing athlete discussion, which I've been talking about quite a bit. Steve Kirsch's newsletter discusses exactly what we've been talking about. Over a 60-time increase in pro sports adverse events since the vaccines rolled out. 60 times. Nobody can explain that. Of course, as we've been seeing, all walks of life, everywhere, independent media, mainstream, everybody, oh, it's fake news, you're misrepresenting it. Some poo-poo these events, saying that they happen all the time. True, they do happen, but not at this rate. And I've already proven that to you. Something happened in 2021 that changed things by a lot. Can you guess what that was? We've already talked about this a lot. I've shown you the breakdown. I think it was 1.46 events per 100,000 athletes per year. Right now, we are 60 times that. You can't misrepresent this. It's obvious. Now, he says, let's take a look at a recent video posted by Robert Malone, which I think I grabbed. I thought I had that included here, right here. We'll watch it in a second. I just said he shared a compilation. It's a new compilation, too. You probably haven't seen it. We're just calling it the collapsing athlete cover-up. But this includes more than just athletes. We'll watch it in a second. But, you know, Malone has Steve Kirsch's ear, so he caught his attention with this. Got him to share it. Now here's what it says. All of these cases have been properly reported and are documented. Absolutely. You know this because I've gone through it on my show. But because people want to dismiss things out of hand, they just pretend like it's not valid. It happens all the time. Therefore, you're a conspiracy theorist. But that's not actually finding anything, is it? That's choosing to ignore what's in front of you because of what the media told you to think. No mentions except one case of vaccination since the press doesn't want to create vaccine hesitancy. They don't mention in these reports about whether they're vaccinated or not, even though it's obvious that they've already admitted it can lead to myocarditis and other forms of heart problems. So wouldn't it be a valid argument as a journalist to be like, well, here's one included data point that could be possibly connected, but nope. They already know they're not allowed to talk about the vaccine in any negative ways, regardless of the truth, so they don't talk about it. But let the numbers speak for themselves. Exactly. The numbers, as documented in this article, and the past thing, I'll just grab them real quick so we can include them for you. The past two shows that we did on this topic. The second one is more extensive. The first one here, children, athletes are collapsing. I don't know why Brave does not bring up our images. This is the first one. I go into the overall picture and the breakdown. This one, I bring in the comparison, right? I break down the studies of a 20-year study around collapsing and, you know, basically cardiac arrest in sports. And it unequivocally shows you this is way, way higher than it should be normally. So I'll include those for you. But he says, the numbers show that there have been more events over a recent four-month period, over the last 4 months, than in the total combined last 20 years. If you out there on Twitter or the mainstream media or the corporate media are trying to misrepresent this as not being valid, you are blatantly lying or you're choosing to ignore this. I mean, look, 4 month period, more than the last 20 years, there's no way you can argue that that is just coincidence. That's 60 times. All of these are in full public of the view or of the public, right? We've seen this. We've shown it. It's happening on the middle of games. So there's no reporting bias, and the numbers are big enough that nobody can say, oh, that's just statistical noise. Not a chance, he says. It's just too hard to explain. This is why there are articles like these. German news agency tracks 75 prominent athletes suddenly dead of heart attacks. Yeah, but it's all fake news, though, right? As we just showed you this one, puzzling heart disease in football, Germany writes on September 11th. An unusually large number of professional soccer have collapsed. Like, they're literally trying to pretend this isn't happening while it's happening and they're reporting it on other parts of the world. It says, we have a very clear mechanism of action and we have overwhelming confirmation from the VAERS data that these vaccines are super dangerous and cause cardiovascular and neurological severe adverse events at a very high rate. Nothing else can compare to the vaccines when we talk about heart damage. So if you believe these events really did happen, they're in plain sight after all, you can see them happen. He means individually, then you must ascribe them to the vaccine since there is nothing else all these people have in common that could cause such an extreme elevation of events. Right? What else can you point to that they all have in common simultaneously in the exact same time frame, exact correlation, 60 times? Also, the Jessica Rose myocarditis paper that was unethically temporarily removed by Elsevier over the objection of the editor of the journal and in violation of all known scientific protocols. Well, her paper had a very clear conclusion. This is the point I just made. The heart damage wasn't confined to 16-year-olds. It has a long tail. In other words, it can affect people of all ages. Not just boys, not just teenagers. They don't want you to know that. And we reported this already. We went over this when this came out. And remember this, then this is when all the, you know, peanut gallery, oh, it's been removed. You're fake news conspiracy theorists. Like, you know, it's embarrassing that people don't understand what a travesty this is, that we have editorial teams removing scientific research in many cases without even telling the scientists, as Robert Malone pointed out. This paper is very valid and the data is there for you to back up for yourself, regardless of what the politics and editorial teams are doing after it's been peer reviewed and accepted. It says, so now you know, the peer-reviewed science says that the heart damage isn't limited to teenage boys. They are still unethically suppressing this as of November 13th, 2021. So there is a smoking gun for the damage done to these athletes. The vaccine, the injection, rather. None of these players had COVID at the time of the event since they're all tested. If it isn't the vaccines causing the heart damage, then what is causing all these events to happen at such a high rate at the same time? Now, here is what they claim the full list is. From my assessment, it's much more than this. Because I've personally found more than that. But regardless, guys, just look at this. For those in the podcast, it is a long list. 33-year-old, 19-year-old, 19-year-old, 21-year-old, 29-year-old, 15-year-old, football player, died, all the way down. 16, 19, 16, 17, 29, all the way down. And of course, he points out the same thing we just pointed out. Cannabis use disorder to the rescue, citing no evidence whatsoever, the pro-vaccine people assert that it is due to cannabis use disorder. Now, why would they need to jump into this and say, look, that's what's doing it? So you admit something's doing it, and you don't know what it is, but yet you're totally willing to ignore what you already admitted this injection can cause? How is that not a willful, willful ignorance? They see it. They admit it's happening. They admit that something's doing it, and they're seeking out anything anywhere else that they could point to, and they will ignore the injection. How embarrassing. An injection they have already admitted can cause the problem that they're trying to suppress. Good God. Citing no evidence whatsoever, they assert that this is due to cannabis use disorder, which, don't forget, look it up for yourself. It is a euphemism for people who smoke cannabis. A lot, they would argue. People who smoke a lot of cannabis. How is it a disorder exactly? People can do, I mean, you don't have a disorder when you're smoking excessively lots of cigarettes. So it's a choice to make this into something it's not. Make it sound like it's a problem when really it's just you using cannabis. By the way, though, it says this could cause a 7% spike in the number of cases. We just went over this because that's what their data found. So they're going, look, cannabis did it. And their data said it can cause a 7% spike. Only one problem, though. We're talking about an elevated rate by 6,428%, not 7%. So even with the CUD theory, the cannabis use disorder theory, we still have 6,421% increase to explain. Oops, doesn't really work out, does it? And as I pointed out, it's not just athletes either. It's everyone. Veyers has been showing this since January 2021, but the pro-vax community says it's just junk data when it isn't. Science, since most people don't know about Veyers, they just believe the so-called fact checkers. Exactly. Now, there's a lot more in here that I continue to show. Please read through this. They're referencing the expose article we just talked about. There's a lot of good stuff in here. Here are the ones we just covered on this topic. The one they removed. Now, I want to play you a quick clip from that Star Wilson just broke down from our cannabis coverage in case you didn't see it, because this is pretty ridiculous. This is them trying to argue that cannabis is causing this. Well, you know what? I'm going to second guess that. It's 2 minutes. I don't want this to be too long today, but watch this for yourself. It's a great clip where we go into...
It's the worst thing you can do, except that's always what they've been saying. And that's
basically the breakdown of how they're trying to scapegoat cannabis into this. Great clip. Star's doing an outstanding job with all these clips. Soon to be doing longer ones as well. It's just frustrating. This was on 11-11. That they're trying to couch this on something that they've been trying to do for a very long time, despite the fact that cannabis, in fact, has very obvious, positive, healthy, anti-inflammatory properties to the very thing that they're claiming is inflaming your body. It's not only counterintuitive, it's just blatantly false. It's frustrating. But as we showed you, it's obvious this is happening. It's obvious that this is increased to a degree that they cannot hide. Here's Robert Malone, and I will play this one for you, the breakdown of just more of them that we haven't seen. More collapsing athletes. Hashtag collapsing athlete cover-up.
Is rare. It's just one of those tragedies.
Did she have any signs before this race?
Absolutely not. She felt like she was in the best shape of her life.
That's incredible.
For those on the podcast, it's just an endless string, an endless listing of reports of exactly what we've been telling you. And I mean, look. Just more clips.
USC wants to attack, but you've got to be careful. He collapsed.
Wow.
We have a player down. Something happened to one of the referees. We've had a heartbreaking situation here.
Is rare.
Now, if you're one of those people out there watching this and you know in your heart that there's something wrong here, right? Regardless of the data, regardless of the fact that it's 60 times the normal event, and you can prove this, we already have. You can look at the data from the previous years, compare it. All the data is in his article. I've done it in a previous show, on my last one, and on this one, in fact. You can see quite clearly this is exponentially more than we've seen before. Now, yes, I'll even point out there that, yeah, could it be caused by something? Of course it could. But what else is different that's leading to the increased risk of heart attack, of thrombosis, of blood clot, of all the things we're seeing, of myocarditis, of heart problems, of pericarditis, myopericarditis, all these things we've admitted it can happen. So if you are staring at this, the reality of that, and you're walking away going, nah, that's just fake news, that's a choice. You're consciously choosing to ignore the obvious, dangerous reality of what this is showing us. The most healthy among us are collapsing in real time to an exponentially increased degree, 60 times what we've seen in the past years. There's no ignoring that unless you choose to ignore it. As Dr. Where's his name? I thought I saw his name on here. As this doctor points out, hi, Ryan, 20 years as a paramedic. I have never seen a teenager, someone in their 20s or 30s have a heart attack. The fallout of athletes has never been like this before. Just somebody's opinion. But again, we're proving this with the data that we're showing you, the real world information. And while this is happening, don't let this be lost on you. How absurd it is that we can be censored for continuing to talk about myocarditis because of the data, the research that came out long before the corporate media and the government and the FDA and the CDC admitted to you the research that was always there. The same research that they're still pointing to now to go, yeah, it looks like there's a link. It's far more than a link, as the CDC has already admitted. But here's the Wall Street Journal, COVID-19 vaccines and myocarditis link probed by researchers. What do you mean probed by researchers? Are you trying to just contend? Are you contending this is not verified? They've already admitted that it's actually an increased risk. They've had to roll their story back and say, well, it's actually increased, but it's more of a risk if you get the COVID-19. That's been their newest narrative, except that's a false comparison because the risk of them getting COVID-19 is dramatically lower. But once you get the shot in your arm, you got the risk right there. You get your increased risk of myocarditis when you get the shot. So you're giving a child that has a very low risk of catching COVID or dying from COVID an immediate increased risk of something that can increase their mortality by up to 50% in the next 10 years, even a low case of myocarditis. You see the difference? That injection goes in their arm, you immediately have the risk. It comes along with the injection. The risk of COVID comes along only once you catch it, which is very low for people in that category. It couldn't be more clear, but sure, they'll argue that it's very obvious. Now, what's funny here is that this was open, and then it broke down the paywall after the fact, but I do have a screenshot of what I grabbed, but let me just read this part. As U.S. health authorities expand the use of leading COVID-19 vaccines, right. So as they expand the use of these things, we're looking into this problem that might kill you. But take them now. Hurry. Right. Totally lines up. Investigating heart-related risks linked to the shots are exploring several emerging theories. Right. All these different opaque words like we investigating linked possible theories of we don't know for sure, including one centered on the spike protein. Gee, like it's like they're tuning into our shows from like a year and a half ago. Researchers aren't certain why the messenger RNA vaccines, one from Pfizer and Moderna, are likely causing inflammatory heart conditions. Shit, we don't know why, except that we've unequivocally shown you exactly why that's happening. Come on, guys, this is pathetic how they're trying to undermine this all this time later. The inflammatory response to the spike protein has been shown by like 11 different studies, including the Salk Institute, that said it was unequivocal. It can even lead to disease itself. And it showed how it can be. I mean, I've gone over this so much. It makes it pain. It's painful to watch groups like that. Either shows you that these authors, Peter Luftus himself, or the Wall Street Journal entirely, are that bad at what they're doing, or they're just ignoring the real world information to sell a narrative. It's painful. But here's the one thing I did clip, as it says, the antibodies against the spike protein may have unintended effects of acting against heart proteins, wrote the review of the injury. Yeah, you mean like what we keep telling you? That when you inject somebody with a injection primed to an older variant, that it creates antibodies for something that you don't need, and that leads to antibody-dependent enhancement, or it leads to other problems like this? Gee, who would have thought that? I don't know, maybe Dr. Malone, maybe Dr. Yeadon, maybe Dr. Bakhti, maybe Dr. everyone that we've had on the show that continue to tell you this is exactly what was going to happen. James Lyons Weiler, Dr. Denny Rancourt. Yeah, who would have thought? It's like no one's listening to the experts that are telling you you're in danger until they quietly and meekly roll out a small portion of what they have to admit to. The antibodies against the spike protein are having unintended effects on your body. Why? Because your body is being primed for something that it's not there. We'll get to these again in a second. Specifically, things that are made with the original strain and Delta, antibody-dependent enhancement. I wonder if I can get this to come up real quick. I haven't looked at this in a while. Yep, there you go. I've talked about this quite a bit. All right, this is the study that came out back in December 2020 that made the very clear, and it said very clearly, the specific and significant COVID-19 risk of antibody-dependent enhancement should have been, meaning they knew in the beginning and didn't do anything about it, and should be prominently now and independently disclosed to research subjects that were in the trials, those being recruited for trials, and those right now getting it after the fact in order to meet informed consent. Gee, they said that back on December 2020, and it's weird that nobody did anything about that. Isn't that funny? It's been peer-reviewed since then, March 2021. Who cares, though? Still fake news because we didn't do that and we aren't meeting informed consent by definition because they very clearly found this problem and no one's talking about it. Same thing it says here, because right now they're still giving you injections based on the original strain, even though that's not what we're dealing with by their own admission. And so it's creating antibodies for something that you're not dealing with. And guess what that's leading to? Exactly what we just talked about. It's leading to the problem they're telling you are happening. Isn't that funny? It's almost like we told you this 6 months ago. Crazy, right? It's unbelievable. As Max Headroom points out, don't say we didn't warn you of this months ago. Peer-reviewed papers almost a year ago clearly stated this, and he's referencing, this is where I saw the article, the same one we just looked at. COVID-19 vaccines, probed by Link, it's just ridiculous. And as Just a Thought points out, they're really trying over here. And this is the point about this massive effort to undermine and cover up the reality that this is happening in the people getting the injection. Here, you know, cannabis is all over the place. Cannabis use disorder may be linked to the young heart attacks we're seeing, right? Of course. Guess what? Rise in heart attacks attributed to pandemic stress, poor diet. Yeah, that must be what it is. Everyone's having heart attacks at 13 because they're stressed out. Now, does that add to this problem? Sure. But the reality is obviously the thing leading to blood clots, hearts, strokes, and heart attacks, except they won't admit that the thing that they just admitted can cause heart attacks could be leading to this heart attack, right? Like, think about how ridiculous that is in real time. Yes, this can cause a heart attack, but we refuse to admit that this could be even remotely possible in this conversation because fake news. Here's what Nashville Angela points out, some of the same ones. This is what they're claiming. Depression, weed, food, lack of flu shots, high cholesterol during pregnancy, pollution, climate change, lack of sex, menstrual stress, women having two roles, anxiety, anything but the injection, that's causing heart issues. Look at this stuff. Cannabis, we saw those too. Time for the flu shot. Look at this. Surprising connection between influenza and heart attacks. Are not getting your flu shots causing heart attacks? Sure, why not? Pollution, sure, why not? It's all causing heart attacks, all centralized around the exact timing of the injection administration, right? Depression, anxiety, heart attacks. Now, here's my point. All of these things can contribute to these. They know that. What the point is they're all dumping these on you in the middle of in the middle of a pandemic and we're all in danger and we're wasting time on talking about these unrelated things. Come on. This is what propaganda looks like. Mental stress, high cholesterol, all of it's leading to a cover-up of heart problems that are being clearly tied back to the injection. Based on all the data, by the way, based on all the real-world data that they cannot dismiss, so they ignore it. On top of that, though, this is one of the most absurd realities I've seen, or absurd claims. This has been going on long before COVID-19. Not too much longer, though, and that's what I find most revealing. Again, the timing of it all. So 2019 is when a lot of the arguments are being made that this could have been already circulating, or at the very least, something else was going on. We saw this, and there's plenty of evidence to back that up. I've done plenty of shows about it. So in 2019, they're starting to make the arguments that climate change could increase heart problems. 2019. Okay, well, then it continues. So here's 2019, February. Climate change may cause increased rates of heart defects in babies. Now, when you actually look into this, it's the same kind of argument to say that, well, cannabis can increase this by 7%, therefore cannabis is doing it. No, there's a 6,400-something percent increase, so 7% doesn't cut it. But they'll just kind of hope you don't do the math. Same thing here. It's like, well, this causes an increase, they would argue, but when you see the kind of increase we're seeing, it just does not even remotely add up. Because remember, we're seeing this, we're seeing people, children, we're seeing birth defects, as he just admitted in this discussion, not admitted, but proved to you with the data, fertility issues. Then on top of that, we're seeing children have myocarditis. So this is all combined, and they're just kind of trying to blanket statement this around something that they're going to try to transition this into, that climate change is the risk. So as I said before, get ready for the climate change lockdowns, the emergency climate change declaration. Greta just put in a submission to the UN asking for a declaration of emergency for climate change, which will then lead to the lockdowns and the passports and the whole thing. It's an extension of what we're dealing with. This jumps forward to 2020. So this is in the what we're supposed to be being told is in the middle of the pandemic, of course. He's saying climate change tied to pregnancy risks. Okay. This one, November 9th. This was last week. Climate change threatens pregnant women and their fetuses, more likely to suffer from cardiac disease. Well, that seems a little self-serving right now as we're seeing this happen. Remember, if there's no evidence, according to the CDC or the FDA, that this is safe for pregnant women. It still says it on their websites right now. Not enough evidence to confirm the safety, but they're telling them to do it anyway. Okay, so we know it can cause these problems. So what's that going to do to the baby and their heart health? Well, obviously, I think the answer is pretty clear. Here's another one. This one is October 21st. Climate change is changing babies in the womb. They're more susceptible to heart disease. So now you just have the rest of your life. So now from this point forward, everybody born is more susceptible to heart disease. Doesn't that work out perfectly for everything that's going on? Oh, did you prove that? No. No, just an observation based on observational data, but let's run with that. This is October 19, 2021 from the Defender. Climate change puts babies, pregnant women, at risk, pediatrician says. Puts babies at risk for congenital heart defects. It's interesting. I mean, it seems to be, this narrative seems to be kind of being set. On top of all of that, how they're trying to undermine not even remotely trying to ask the question of whether that's even involved in that. Nope, just completely ignoring it. Meanwhile, we know it's happening because they've admitted it can. And all they can do, aggressively push this on children anyway. You might have seen this video, which is pretty ridiculous if you have. I mean, the idea that he's asked point blank about inflation and his response is about injections. I mean, this is they have successfully blended in the minds of these people that everything everywhere is contingent on kids getting injected. Well, once the kids get injected, then our economy will come, right? But of course, I'm not even kidding. This is what they're arguing.
And I know you're hoping to pass, but even if it does pass, it's going to take a while for the benefits to kick in. So what can Americans expect in the short term? Is inflation going to get worse before it gets better? Is there anything President Biden can do in the short term?
We're focused on how to address this in the short term and the medium term, George. In the short term, number one, we have to finish the job on COVID. We know that the more that people feel comfortable getting out into the economy, going to movies rather than buying a television at home, working in the workplace, the more we can return a sense of normalcy to our economy. Getting those shots out for 5 to 11-year-olds is going to provide a lot of comfort to American families. We're making a lot of progress on that front.
Great. Right. So inject children that don't need it, who aren't at risk, for the protection of the people around them, because that's not cowardly at all, even though it's going to hurt them and not protect the people anyway. But that is about inflation. Don't misunderstand it. So once we get this experimental injection in children's arms, they don't need it. Suddenly the inflation will go away. No, you see, his argument is, well, this will make people feel safer. Therefore, everything will go back to normal. Now, how well has that narrative worked out so far? How many times have they told us just this one thing and we'll go back to normal? That's not in the cards, guys. This is the normal. That's the point. There's no some, you know, grass greener on the other side kind of analogy here. They're not just going to suddenly shift over into a world where all of a sudden inflation goes back, you know, the economy goes back to normal. The people that believe this is, I mean, at this point, the mainstream media could come out and say it's all over. And half these people would go, I don't believe you. I'm scared. Because the media successfully terrified these people to death. So this doesn't mean anything. All this means is everything you ask me is going to be pivoted back to injections. They're talking about the infrastructure bill, by the way, which just passed. Right, the infrastructure around the Great Reset and how they're going to change your entire world under the guise of COVID-19, fighting into, you know, build back better and climate change, all that they all just agreed on, right? Because the Republicans are fighting for you. Totally. Well, as they force this on children, 100 kids in Virginia given the wrong dose of COVID vaccine. How many times have we seen that happen? Are they experimenting on people? Certainly possible. Are they just bad at what they're doing? Certainly possible. How about we recognize that this is not a safe reality that we're in right now? Not even remotely. But all they can do is just jam it down your throats because it's what they want to do. Regardless of the fact that even ABC News is pointing out that there are half the parents out there that are going, no, we don't trust this. Please, again, recognize this is not some fringe versus the majority. I believe you are the majority. Either way, even their own data from the ABC shows you that half of parents in this poll, mind you. So that's a poll that they probably take an effort in areas that they hope will be pro-vaccine. And even then, half of them are skeptical about the safety and effectiveness of the COVID injections for children. Half. Yeah, potentially a key barrier to seek up. Yeah, maybe a barrier to get your children injected. Yeah, just maybe. A barrier? They're concerned about the safety. And all you can act like is, well, that might be a tough issue for us. That's going to give us a little bit of resistance to inject their children. As if it's going to happen anyway. You see the point? Numerous recent surveys have found substantial numbers of parents hesitant to have their children vaccinated against coronavirus. Half the parents. And we're acting like this is just a fringe weirdo scenario where they're all putting everybody at risk. Half the people on their side are concerned. You are the majority. And by the way, as much as they want to be like Republicans, guys, this is nonpartisan. If half the parents are doing that's, this is not broken down along party lines. They're terrified of you recognizing that. Now, shifting this over into the reality of what this is doing. The fact that we can see this all over the place, and even if you just want to talk about cases, which kind of dancing back to this real quick shows you that's obviously more aggressively on the side of people that are vaccinated in the cases, but they go, yeah, it's expected because, you know, it's all the vaccinated mostly, and they pretend like the deaths and the hospitalizations are the one super rare ones, except the data also shows you that's not true. What we're seeing in places like Vermont, the nation's most vaccinated state, as even MSN reports, a COVID-19 explosion in Vermont. COVID-19 explodes in the nation's most vaccinated state. I mean, you know, you can't continue to ignore these things. Even the cases, by the way, don't really line up with what they're saying because they keep going, well, it just means they're much less danger. But that's not what's happening because Vermont itself will show you that's not what's happening. These people are being hurt. All they do is call it COVID-19, and that hides a lot of this. Now, you have to remember on the larger topic of this or this discussion that even those categories are completely manipulated. We know that what they're doing is including people that have one shot or two shots in under 14 days in a category as unvaccinated. They've already admitted that. The CDC said that was what they were doing going forward. So when you see this kind of thing, recognize that even that or even this kind of conversation, it's not even the numbers of unvaccinated are not completely verified. What I think we're seeing here is the obvious reality that people are having these cases and all they're doing is naming all the negative stuff as COVID-19 as opposed to vaccine as breakthrough or vaccine effects. Right? Somebody gets the injection after, and it gets one of them and suddenly has this massive heart attack. And all they do is make that out to be COVID-19. Well, he must have caught COVID. or anything else. It's easy to see. Now, we've proven that they've done this. Newsweek and Forbes have caught them doing this, but we just continue going forward because, oh, he's fake news. It's easy and comfortable to dismiss the reality because you don't like what it shows you. Sad to see, this medical doctor points out, that USC-Cal game was canceled. I hope they make a quick recovery. Quote, 44 players and staff tested positive for coronavirus. These seem to be breakthrough cases since Cal says 99% of the team is fully vaccinated. Again, this doesn't make sense even with their narrative. They argue breakthrough. Remember when the breakthrough cases they said were super rare? Then it became, well, no, it's not because they're mostly vaccinated. But if they were rare, they would still be rare even if most people were vaccinated, right? It doesn't just become no longer rare because you're. It's a shifting of the narrative. If 99% of the people are fully vaccinated, you should see a, you know, grouping of breakthrough cases. That's what they would argue. Not 44 people in the entire. That's the majority. You understand? This is causing them, and I want us to remember, we get into this next discussion right here about this topic, that this is causing them to get sick. There's also that part of it, that there are people that are already having had an infection, who previously had natural immunity, then get the injection, which removes the antibodies from their blood, which I've shown you many times, based on a research article from Israel, based on David Bauer, who's tried to change what he said, even though it's very clear what the research shows. And on top of the Red Cross made this clear, as well as that report that I've shown you many times from the mainstream media. It removes them from your blood. After 2 months, you see a dramatic drop off of antibodies. The point is that people who had an infection first, then get the injection, have a bad response. So what we're seeing is people that get one shot have a terrible response and then go down as unvaccinated. That's not being considered. How about people that get two shots and have a really bad experience after 6 months? And now they're going to try to tell you, well, people who've had COVID-19 have a long-term problem. We'll get into that in a minute. But did they get the injection in the middle of there somewhere? That's relevant, isn't it? Now, if you don't get what I'm saying, we'll get to it in a second and you'll see what I mean. Now, this is the reality right here of what we keep seeing, that this is not isolated and rare. But here is why, what they're trying to say around, actually, this is a mixed bag of this article. Why COVID is surging in states with high vaccination rates. It's kind of an interesting article, what they say here. It's short. It says, in our latest edition of Why is COVID Still Doing That? We're seeing states with relatively high vaccination rates currently going through some of the worst COVID surges in the country. Vermont, for example, has a gold star as far as having much of its population vaxxed, but they're experiencing an unfortunate spike with a 42% surge in cases this past week. Why? Right? There's no explaining it. They just continue to kick it off and say, well, unvaccinated, even though that's not being verified, even though the data shows you that's not even how that works, as even Robert Malone has been pointing out. He even just referenced that the study we've been talking about for a long time now from 2015 that shows you that this is how you increase variants, having a vaccine that reduces severity but allows it to continue to transmit, and there you are, and it continually explodes the variants. But it says, well, the unvaccinated are still largely to blame. Of course they would say that without any qualifying information to back it up, because that's just the easy narrative to dump. But it says, of course, along with waning immunity from the vaccines, colder weather, the Delta variant, and low levels of herd immunity. So is it unvaccinated? Even though doesn't even make sense logically why somebody who doesn't have the injection would cause you to continue to get sick? It doesn't make any sense. But of course, along with waning immunity, which means they're losing immunity, but that's not the main point. Colder weather, which increases illness, but that's not the main point. Delta variant, which is something that they're not even vaccinated against, but that's not the main point. Come on. Largely unvaccinated, because that's what you're supposed to say. It's not true. And it's very easy to prove. And that doesn't even make sense. You may be able to argue unvaccinated are causing variants, but how can being unvaccinated doesn't make you sick? It doesn't mean that you're causing people to get sick. It just simply means you haven't gotten that injection. Most of them have natural immunity, which the data proves. So the point being, all you can argue is that they might be able to cause variants, but how can you continue to argue that they would be causing you to get sick? 42% increase in cases. The unvaccinated. How exactly? Right? You understand how abstract that is. All they're going to say is, well, you're causing variants to occur, which then causes us to get sick. Okay, but all you're pointing to is Delta. That's what everyone's dealing with. That's been here since months ago. So why right now is the unvaccinated? because they're putting you at risk. You see, there's no scientific argument for why they're literally translating to you getting sick, other than you lead to variants, which they haven't proven, and the data doesn't back up. Goes on to say, some experts believe that part of that has to do with the fact that the state was so successful at containing the virus at the beginning of the pandemic that people didn't develop the type of herd immunity that might be present in communities that were ravaged by the virus. I hope you laughed when I just read that, because you know what that's saying? Some experts believe that we should have let people get sick to drive herd immunity. Oh, like the Great Barrington Declaration, you mean? Yeah, so now they're slowly walking back their argument to point back at it and say, well, maybe we should let people get sick who aren't at risk so we can accrue herd immunity. Yeah, exactly what we said in the beginning. See how that works? But it goes on to say, one of the reasons that previous infection matters is because studies have shown that those who have had COVID at some point got vaccinated afterwards have some of the highest chances of evading the crafty Delta variant. That's not true, in fact, because we're going to show you again right now that it is very clearly leading to negative effects. This is a follow-up. This is a follow-up to the first one. Both of them find very clearly peer-reviewed that it's dangerous to get injected after having a previous infection. On top of that, a study from Pittsburgh clearly found that it doesn't even give you increased benefit. On top of that, another major factor in these surges, of course, is that it's getting colder and people are spending more time unmasked and indoors. And since a lot of us getting vaccinated in the spring and early summer, guess what? We're collectively hitting that point where our vaccines are starting to lose their power. Isn't it funny how that's such a common... That's, of course, we all understand that now. But if you had said that back in the beginning, you would have been censored as fake news, dangerous misinformation. These things are 99% effective and they protect you for the rest of your life and blah, blah, blah. That was what they pushed on everybody. But now it's expected they'll go away and I have to get your next one, even though people who have natural immunity, as all the data continues to show you, have lasting, robust T-cell memory B antibody immunity for possibly the rest of their lives. Most of them. I've shown you this 100 times over. But look, our vaccines are waning, so get the injection again for the 50th time. It says, in fact, a recent study published in The Lancet found that Pfizer shots lost up to half their efficacy after 6 months. We can prove that. We can discuss it even on mainstream publications. We can prove that the natural immunity that most people have lasts longer and then prove that if you get a shot after that, it increases your risk. And yet here we are forcing it on all of them. Does that sound like safety to anybody? Colorado is another state whose vaccination rates are higher than the normal average, but residents are still struggling to contain a new surge of the same variant. Why is that exactly? On Thursday, Governor Jared Polis issued an executive order that allows all adults to take the booster shot. You hear that? That move defies the CDC guidelines that so far only recommended for 65 or older. So here we have a very stark example that politics are driving what we're doing. Politics are driving health, not the CDC, not health experts, politics. You should know that by now. It's very obvious, but they'll deny that until the cows come home. Until you admit it right here because they have to. The governor issued an executive order to allow adults to receive the jab, even though the CDC said, no, it's not safe. We don't know. We're not recommending it. How does that make sense? Why can they just dictate an executive order that says, yeah, we'll let you get that thing that they just told you, the health experts they're telling you to listen to just told you you shouldn't be doing? Because it's politics, guys. It's because shot and injection, good no matter what. And at the end of the day, as long as they're getting injected, even the CDC is going to say, well, whatever, get the shot. How crazy is that? It says, but as winter approaches, the holiday travels begin, more states might soon be rushing to approve the booster shots. They're not approving anything. They're executive ordering, mandating in the emergency authorization use for everybody. That's crazy. But it says other states with high vaccination rates that are having surges include New Hampshire, Minnesota, Illinois, all with high vaccination rates, all with surging issues. Most of the lower ones aren't seeing that same problem. We have yet to see another whether high vax rates will significantly curb deaths in these states during the winter. But remember, they say, although this all sounds a little scary, you're still less likely to catch COVID if you're vaccinated. And if you do, you're less likely to get seriously ill. That's just not true. If you do qualify for a booster shot in your state, now is probably a good time to get it. Not true. You're not less likely to catch COVID if you're vaccinated. Clearly, that's not showing. I mean, look at the cases. Like, they're just straight up ignoring the reality of the cases. But I don't want to go back to that. going forward on this, I want us to recognize how ridiculous this is, that the data shows you what's going on and all they can do is kind of equivocate about it and hide the reality. The CDC itself are shifting away from reaching herd immunity. Now, why would that be? Well, because they just admitted to you that they're not even remotely coming close to reaching this because the vaccinated are still spreading, which is what we've been telling you from the very beginning. So herd immunity, as even this article admitted again, remember, could have been reached had we let people who weren't really at risk just deal with it like the flu, like normal people would have. But nope, we didn't do that. So it's almost like you can argue that they didn't want to reach herd immunity. See how this works? We can see these choices that have been made throughout this process that have led to exactly what works for them, even if it's looking like they just kind of clumsily fell into it, which is usually how they would rather look, incompetent than criminal, right? Well, the CDC shifts away from herd immunity all this time, right? So we're all this way into this whole thing, justifying all the mandates and all everything they're doing by herd immunity. Now they're finally going, well, we're never going to do that. But keep getting the shots, though. As it says here, vaccines have been quite effective in preventing COVID-19 that lead to severe death. Nope, not true. Just showed you. But none has proved reliable at blocking transmission of the virus. They're still censoring that claim on Twitter right now. None of them stop transmission. And we've told you that from day one. Please recognize that. Not because we guessed, not because we were assuming, but because the data backed that up. And only now are they even slightly admitting that's the case. Isn't it crazy? We're not psychic, guys. You're just watching the show that's being honest to you. So if we're shifting away from herd immunity, what now? That's a good question. So what changes? The idea here is, as Brooks says, he worries that the CDC backs off a specific target for herd immunity, it'll take the air out of the efforts to run up vaccination levels. Okay, so they admitted that they're not going to reach herd immunity because of many factors. But what they're going is, well, we shouldn't tell the people that, because if we admit that that's not going to happen, well, they'll stop getting injected. So you should lie to them, Brooks? Yes, that's essentially what they're saying, which is what they've been saying from the beginning. As the UK documentation made clear, we'll lie to you to avoid vaccine hesitancy. So they're going to keep treating you like a child and say, herd immunity. Just keep thinking you're going to get there, little one. Take your shot. Take your fifth one. Take your sixth one. Hurry right around the corner. We don't know the level, but we're going to get there. You're being lied to. We need to recognize how they're treating you. And it says, and if public health officials stop talking about the herd, even though they know it's not going to happen, people may lose sight of the fact that vaccination is not just an act of personal protection, but of course, now in the bastardized version of the world we live in, is now a way to protect the community. Right, so the shot that's supposed to help you not get sick and protect transmission is about protecting other people, which has never really been the case. Other than the idea that if you're not sick, you wouldn't be able to spread it. But the idea is these people are still spreading it. So how then does it work as personal protection? Especially since the numbers show you that they're getting sicker than anybody. A public tack away from the promise of herd immunity may also further undermine the CDC credibility when it comes to fighting the virus. Oh, so we should continue lying to people because we don't want to undermine the credibility of a group that's lied to you? That's literally what it says. Not literally, I mean, that's what it says. On issues ranging from the use of masks to how the virus spreads, the CDC has made dramatic about faces over the course of the pandemic. Those reversals were prompted by new scientific discoveries, which is not even true, by the way. It's not true. They come up with some ridiculous in-lab observational study of masks that's super ridiculous that have been attacked from every mainstream. Like, okay, I think it was Swiss Policy, many highly regarded scientific publications that went after these ridiculous studies, but they keep pointing to them. They weren't prompted by new discoveries. They were prompted by rapid efforts in the middle of what we're told was a pandemic. How does that make sense? But it says reversals were prompted by what they found and discoveries about how the novel virus behaves, but they also provided ample fuel for the skeptics, especially those in conservative media. See how that goes? Not that we're already admitting it's not going to happen and we're afraid to say that, but conservatives. Quote, we said, based on our experience with the other diseases, that when you get up to a 70% to 80%, you often get herd immunity. But the SARS-CoV-2 virus didn't get the memo. Great. So you're guessing? You're driving this in at a guess, which is what we've always known, even though they keep pushing it. We don't know for sure. We don't know if it's even possible, but we're going to keep forcing it on children because we think that might be the case. This is just criminal, guys. Quote, it has a lot of tricks up its sleeve and it's repeatedly challenged us. Quote, it's impossible to predict what herd immunity will be in a new pathogen until you reach herd immunity. So we're going to guess our way into the game. I mean, think about how crazy that is. We're going to guess our way there with children's lives. Public health officials hope to redefine success in terms of new infections and deaths. And they'll surmise that herd immunity has been achieved when both remain low for a sustained period. Now this becomes wildly unaccountable. So now it's no longer about herd immunity. It's about when we decide, based on our new metric, another changing definition in real time, that the infections and deaths, by the way, which they actively manipulate using all sorts of metrics behind the scenes, until those things drop below a certain level, which we'll decide to not tell you, for a sustained period of time. How long? Up to us. That could not be more subjective. So now this, as I've told you, will go on forever, as it always was planning to do, because this will never go down to zero. So we don't even know what the number is or how long it's supposed to not be there until they stop this. We just have to wait for them to say, okay, you did it. Gee, I wonder if that never happens. And here's just my tweet about that. Even while CDC, Pfizer, and mainstream media continue to blatantly lie about it, none of them block transmission. Meanwhile, the thing that you're going to have to keep taking, the thing that doesn't actually do what they say it does, the thing that's being forced on everybody, under the guise that it will bring you back to normal. Don't forget that. Remember in the beginning when I said if you knew this was going to last 2 years, and when first time I said it was if you knew this would last 3 months, would you keep complying? Here we are almost 2 years into it. If you knew this was going to last 2 years, would you keep complying? A lot of them would no matter what at this point because they're refusing to admit that they could have been fooled. But the idea that the booster will bring you back to normal, the idea that the shot will, the next booster, the fifth booster, whatever it is, the idea that this will bring you back to some normal is completely broken. They are admitting to you here and now that this is never on the table and it never was. How long will boosters last? November 14th. Boosters are a hot topic now, they say, and our inbox is full of questions about them, especially this one. How long will they last? Now, let me ask you a question real quick. This shows you something that really we need to understand about the average people out there that don't really investigate this stuff, that aren't really, they're concerned about what's going on, but they're in the middle. They're not really paying attention, but they don't want to know. You know, there's a grouping of people like that in this country. Why are they reaching out to Bloomberg? Right? So you're going, hey, Bloomberg, how long are the boosters going to last? Which then Bloomberg needs to ask the experts. And even then, why would you trust Bloomberg? Like, why would somebody be writing to Bloomberg to ask about how long the boosters? Why wouldn't you reach out to the CDC or the FDA or anybody? I mean, isn't that weird? And what I want you to see from that is that this is how our society has been brought up in this during, at very least during this manipulation. These are the experts. The media, this is why they just try to frame themselves as equally respected as veterans, which is just insulting to everything everywhere. But they want you to see them as the experts, that you ask them, hey, Bloomberg, tell me what's going on. And if they tell you that, well, that's the truth then, because that's obviously ridiculous. You should be doing your due diligence about what Bloomberg tells you. Anyway, going forward, as of Friday, the CDC said you are eligible for a booster if you're 18 and older and received the Johnson & Johnson vaccine more than 2 months ago, received either the Pfizer or Moderna mRNA vaccine, and are 65 or older. What's interesting to me is that this now says received the vaccine more than, by the way, this was only Johnson & Johnson, right? The 65 and older was the Pfizer Moderna for the booster. That's the point we just made in regard to why they were referencing that. But here, it says more than 2 months ago, right? Which, by the way, remember, shows you the 2 month drop off of the antibodies, which both apply to not just the J&J, but very clearly Pfizer, Moderna, which we've proven. But then it goes on to say received either the Pfizer or Moderna vaccine are 65 and older. Okay, where's the associated time frame? So you're allowed to get a booster if you've just ever had Pfizer, Moderna? I had it yesterday. Can I get the booster? Apparently, yes. Right? I mean, where's the time frame? It's weird they leave that out, and I think that's very telling. I think the idea is they don't want you to know the breakdown of the antibodies because Johnson & Johnson is supposed to look like the bad one. Then it says either you received either Pfizer or Moderna shot and are 18 years of older and have underlying conditions. Still, no time frame. Some of us need boosters for two reasons, they say. The first is the protection against mild and moderate illness, which is all they ever researched, ever, in these trials, provided by the initial vaccination appears to wane over time, especially among older individuals, the most at risk. Exactly. So the vaccine doesn't work. It immediately starts to drop off and doesn't sustain, and that's a problem. The second reason is that the Delta variant is more infectious, not more dangerous. Remember, I said that earlier. They've never gone back to that because it's not. This means everyone, even vaccinated people, is more likely, which is actually the way you would say that. I just think that's funny. It's a poorly designed sentence. This means everyone, even vaccinated people, is more likely to get exposed to an infectious dose of the virus and have it challenge their immune system. Even vaccinated people are more likely to be exposed to an infectious dose. The booster helps your immune system mount an effective response. Well, it doesn't seem to, not based on the data, but I know that's the narrative. But the point is that they're going, yeah, everyone's at risk. Delta, it's all Delta. It says, it may turn out that the term booster is a bit of a misnomer and that the correct number of shots for maximum efficacy isn't yet known. Isn't yet known. Vaccination recommendations often change as more data becomes available over time. Exactly. If you think this next shot's going to be it, or the one after that, or the one after that, you're not listening to what they're telling you. This is not going to be just a boot. I'll play what Fauci says next. This is going to be your future forever. It says, now onto the question of how long boosters will last. That's a tough one. It's possible, says Justman, that the month-long gap between initial doses of the vaccine and boosters will help the immune system maintain a strong response for a much longer period than the initial regimen did. Which, by the way, there's no reason that makes sense. It's the same damn shot. You're getting the same thing. Why that would suddenly work differently in your body is ridiculous. But it says, but we need more data to have any sort of definitive answer on that. Right. So let's inject a bunch of people in real time so we can find out whether it works. Exactly. That's what's happening. Do you want to be the person being tested on? Take a look at all the athletes collapsing in real time. Probably not. The hope was that getting the virus under control by vaccinating a large percentage of the population would turbocharge an economic recovery. Now we know it's not that simple. Yeah, we always knew that. You mean injecting people with something that hurts them is not going to improve the economy while you're forcing people on lockdown? Shocking. The virus is not hurting the economy, you children. It's your lockdowns. But they know that. They don't care. It's silly. It's silly and childish, the arguments they're making. But as it goes forward, the point here is that they're going to admit to you that this is not going away. This is going to be a continual cycle. Before we get to that, though, just realize that I want you guys to spread these everywhere you can. Right now, they're giving shots, boosters and otherwise, that were designed around the original strain. That's not what's in front of people, so they tell us, arguing from within their narrative. They're saying Delta is everywhere, right? Well, this study, peer-reviewed from Journal of Infection, makes it very clear that that exact situation increases dramatically your risk of antibody-dependent enhancement. ADE may be a concern for people receiving vaccines based on the original strain, which all of them are. All of them. Except the ones they're now trying to rush out for new things. And by the time those come out, we'll probably be dealing with some new strain because of the rapid explosion of variants being caused by the injections. Again, the point I just wanted to include for you guys to read later is this was back in December 2020. They found specific and significant risk of antibody-dependent enhancement from the injections, guys. And this is before the variants were coming into play, right? It's obvious this is a risk they don't want you knowing about and they're hiding. But another one, this was actually the first one, previous COVID infection is associated with increased risk of events. So not only are you getting, if you're getting a shot that's based on the previous strain, can that cause a risk? But if you previously had the injection and then got the shot, it also increases your risk. This is most people. That's why I think all this is happening. But on top of all of that, you have immunity already if you had the infection before. As the most recent one from The Lancet from November 8th says, on top of the other 45 studies that I've shown you from Nature, from Science Mag, from Science, from Journal of Infection, from The Lancet, from the WHO, from the NIH, all of them I've shown you, all of them say lasting, durable, and robust. Memory B, T cell, antibodies, all of it. None of that is happening the same way it is natural infection on the side of the injection, not even remotely. In fact, it's only causing neutralizing antibodies to die off in 2 months, not even in mucosal immunity. So it's not stopping infection. That's the point. It's not stopping transmission. But here's what it says. The most recent one, the risk of repeat infection decreased to 80.5 to almost to 100% among those who had previously been infected. Potentially 100% decreased infection. Then it goes on to say, and that's what they found in the general sense by the data, but when they did their real world study with these people, those who had been previously infected in their group in their study, incident rate of 0 per 100 people. You can look at it for yourself. There's the link. Zero. Meaning, by and large, according to The Lancet, the people who had previously infected are not getting it again. But when you inject them with something that causes these problems, well, there you go. Now suddenly you're causing them to get stuff. The spike proteins leading to infection like the Salk Institute showed you and causing disease, which is being labeled COVID-19 and on and on and on. Or you give them an injection while they're dealing with that, first of all, and then you come in contact with a Delta variant. Now you're already having extra adverse events because you already had an infection, but then you come into contact with the Delta variant when you had original strain based on the Wuhan strain, and then you have even more antibody-dependent enhancement problems. You see how this is compounding? And it's all based on peer-reviewed science from the people they tell us to trust. But we're fake news? Apparently. Dr. Fauci admits vaccines did not work as advertised and that vaccines are in great danger, that vaccinated are in great danger today. Now, this is, of course, the Gateway Pundit's take on what he said. Important to point that out. This is their, what, that's not what he said. That's what they're, but generally, I mean, you can listen for yourself. But it says, it should be clear by now that the pandemic will not end until Fauci is removed and replaced. Now, this again is the partisan angle. Why would that make sense? Why would one person being pulled out of a clear establishment effort change what's happening? Are we going to pretend that Fauci gets removed and suddenly all the other people driving this right now are going to go, oh, Fauci's gone, so it's over? No, it's because the partisan angle is to make it only Fauci in China, and that's it. Game over. Trump's the good guy. Fauci's out. Everyone's back to normal. Nope, that's childish and naive. That's not how this works, but that's the narrative angle, the partisan angle. But here's what it lists off, and I'll actually just want to, I'm going to show it to you on the Yahoo article they took this from. But what I want to show you, interestingly enough, and I'm not sure what this means, this could be some mistake that I'll let you think for yourself. They're letting you play, they're playing just the part where Fauci says this right here. But note that it starts at 542. And here's how it sounds in the beginning.
Point number three, we are seeing something that is really interesting, and I'd like to...
Okay, so you can see that it went from 5 to 547. Point number three is where it starts, right? Now, jump over here to the Yahoo article. First of all, show you that this is what he reads off right here. But since I made that point first, let me show you this based on this article. Here's where it comes from. Now here you can see 539. Now note that the timing is different, and I don't know really the difference, and I don't really know why that is. Watch.
Million people in the country who are unvaccinated, although they are eligible to be vaccinated. Point number three, we are seeing something that is really interesting, and I'd like to get a little bit more unpacking of it with you in a bit.
Mm-hmm. So you can see where he says, point number three, it starts at a different time than it does on this article. So what I'm actually wondering is whether this has been altered, right? So maybe when the Gateway Pundit caught this and clipped it, that's what it was when it first came out. That possibly since then, that the time has been changed, which means maybe something was taken out or added. I don't know. It's certainly possible and we should be considering, but isn't that interesting? I just want to make sure we saw that because it's like that. This is the kind of real-time altering of data, real-time manipulation, real-time revision of history that we keep seeing. It's crazy. Now, that being said, consider that. If somebody can find out whether they can prove that or not, I'd love to find that out. But here's what the Yahoo article says, which is what they're referencing here. Jump over to yahoo.news. Dr. Fauci just issued this urgent warning to vaccinated people. Here's what he says. On November 12th, actually, you know what we should do? Let's just play it, and then we'll read through and see if there's any differences. So here's what he says.
Get metaphorical about it. Number two, you have about 60 plus million people in the country who are unvaccinated, although they are eligible to be vaccinated. Point number three, we are seeing something that is really interesting, and I'd like to get a little bit more unpacking of it with you in a bit. Mm-hmm. And that is we're starting to see waning immunity against infection and waning immunity against hospitalization.
I just want to point something out real quick, and it's a relatively small thing, but this, you know, this is the kind of thing that should matter, especially to the stuffy mainstream journalists, that they misquote him right here. And it's a small thing, but you know, this is like the Brooke Jackson conversation from the British Medical Journal, where people, they're saying, well, finding needles on the ground in the middle of the hallway is not indicative of data problems. Yeah, well, it kind of is, though, because it speaks to a lack of competence, a lack of concern for the proper way things work. So in the same small point here, I want to go back real quick. Just listen to what it's saying and recognize that they slightly misquote him there. Now, of course, I mean, that's a mistake, small one, but it should speak to the credibility of the people doing the work.
People in the country who are unvaccinated, although they are eligible to be vaccinated. Point number three, we are seeing something that is really interesting, and I'd like to get a little bit more unpacking of it with you in a bit. Mm-hmm. And that is we're starting to see waning immunity against infection and waning immunity in the beginning aspect against hospitalization. And if you look at Israel, mm-hmm. which has always been a month to a month and a half ahead of us in the dynamics of the outbreak, in their vaccine response, and in every other element of the outbreak, they are seeing a waning of immunity, not only against...
Okay, so that was my mistake. I listened to it earlier. So that was... Oops, my microphone just fell down. So the point was that he circles back and says it, so I take that back, just so we're clear. But I just thought that was really interesting at first. But that does happen regardless, but let's get back to it. So he says, so we'll just pick it up right where that was. So they're seeing a waning of immunity, not only against infection, but against hospitalization and to some extent death.
Infection, but against hospitalizations and to some extent death, which is starting to now involve all age groups.
Right. Think about what he just said. Do you realize how clearly that contrasts what everyone's been saying? A waning of immunity. So you're saying that this now can increase their death and hospitalization, which, by the way, the data keeps backing up. But now he's grudgingly, quietly admitting a fraction of the reality. Right? Just like everything else. Well, myocarditis is obvious and severe risk and increases by this much. And they come out and go, well, it's super, super, super rare. But yeah, it does happen. And now where are we? Oh, that's right. Exactly what we said to begin with. Now it's clear it's an increased risk, but COVID's worse. Okay, so then can we all admit that they were wrong when they said it was not increased and that we were being censored for? Obviously. We all see that. They suppressed what we found, which was very obvious. They censored people saying it. They lied about it. Then when it finally got too much to bear, they admitted that, well, it is actually an increased risk. And I guarantee what they're admitting is lower than the reality. And they'd never circle back and say, yep, you guys were right.
Isn't just the elderly. Mm. So if one looks back at this, one can say, do you know, it isn't as if a booster is a bonus, but a booster might actually be an essential part of the primary regimen that people should have.
That's interesting. Is that what you're saying? It shouldn't be seen as a bonus. It should be seen based on this waning immunity,
right,
as part of how we think of basic vaccinations.
I think when all is said and done, as we get through boosting the overwhelming majority of the people who've been primarily vaccinated, we're going to say, just like other vaccines that require multiple doses, like hepatitis B, like some of the childhood vaccinations, that it is likely, and I'm making my own personal projection as an immunologist and infectious disease person,
yep,
we don't have the proof yet. The proof of the pudding will be after you get people vaccinated and boosted, and we have a greater durability of protection that doesn't wane as easily. We may realize that, you know, we did a prime and a boost because we were in a medical emergency, a public health emergency.
Nope.
We didn't have the time to do an extensive phase 2A, phase 2B study.
Oops. You mean those studies that everyone on Twitter would scream were done perfectly and longer than ever and the best studies of all time? Nope. Fauci just admitted to you we skipped them. We did them fast because we're in an emergency, which I've always said was the case. They're claiming there's a reason they skipped these things and did them short. But the media sphere, the mainstream and corporate media and everyone else would argue that's just fake news. This is the crazy world we're in right now. It's Fauci literally admitting what we've always been telling you, except that when you say it on Twitter, it's fake news because didn't you know these were the longest, most extensive studies ever done in history? That's actually what the news says. I mean, it's just comically ridiculous. But what he's telling you is that this is going to be continual. Now, realize that what he's saying is we don't have the proof. It's in the pudding, which means you're the test. Once we give you the injection that we told you the first one was going to be enough, now we're going to find out whether it will be enough, and then we'll go from there. That sounds scientific. How about we realize that Israel's already proving that that's not going to be the stop? They already are on shot for it. It's already happening. Because why would the same thing cause something different? We already know how this thing works in your body. So why adding what they're going to add, what they're all going to start compounding and working together? Well, doesn't that challenge the idea that the first shot is out of your body? Didn't you swear up and down that this thing left your body and it's all back to normal? Okay, so then why would the third one be added to your body suddenly work any different? They're just grasping at straws here, guys. This is what looks like to lie about everything. This is where you're going with this. This is your future. I feel like I skipped something on this. I was looking for the word endemic in there because maybe it wasn't one of these that I missed. As a result of findings, Fauci warned that the vaccination should get their booster shot. It might actually be more important to health officials realized. I think the boosting is going to be an absolutely essential component of our response. I must have missed something. I must have lost one of my articles. In any case, yeah, I guess. Well, let's keep going. The point is, guys, and this gives the reality anyway, that what they're essentially telling you is this is not going away. This is going to be your future, circulating forever. More shots. Finally, the impact of COVID-19 critical illness on new disability, functional outcomes, and return to work at 6 months, a prospective cohort study. God, that's driving me crazy right now because I know I missed something in there, but I'm not going to try to go back because it'll take too long. I don't know what I'm looking for. It's driving me crazy. And the bottom line is that their own words, they're telling you this is endemic, right? It's like the flu. No? Damn it. That's frustrating to me. I know I had something. I'll probably find it after the show and it'll drive me crazy. Because that was the main reason why I discussed the idea that they're admitting this, because they're telling you this is going to be your future, and it's going to continue. No, not that. Yep, not that one. I'm sorry, guys. That's driving me crazy. Basically, they're arguing that this is going to be going on forever, as I've already said. But yep, I'm going to skip past it. Oh, well. Damn it, that drives me crazy. All right, so the bottom line is, and we will continue to, bring this back to you on the next show and whatever else. But it's all the information on this is important enough, right? This right here. They're admitting to you that this is going to be something that is not just a booster that's added to it, but it's part of the regimen. So if they're telling you right now that this is not something that is additional, that it's needed to meet your requirements, what does that tell you? It is going to be, you're not vaccinated until you get this, because it's part of the regimen now. So that is the injection. You didn't get your full regimen. It's pretty obvious to see where that's going, right? And they're going to tell you this is like the flu. This is going to continue to circle around. So jumping to the next part. This is important because what they're trying to say here is that people who have had COVID-19 are dying within 6 months, a lot of them dying and having exponential problems. I believe quite strongly that this is because of these two issues. People that previously had an infection that then get an injection and increase dramatically their risk, And all the, and they don't include the injection anywhere in that study. All it is if you've had COVID. And the point is a lot of people that have had COVID have been convinced or forced to get the shot. So there's a huge portion of this that is considered people that we know are increasing their risk because of the science. On top of that, we know that they're getting a Wuhan strain-based vaccine while Delta variant is everywhere, which also leads to their body attacking itself. So they leave out, so all this leads to is people that have previously had the injection, which are increasing their risk. And that gets labeled as just people who have had COVID that are now getting sick. Interesting, right? Here's what it says. At 6 months after COVID-19 critical illness, death and new disability was substantial. That's pretty crazy. Over a third of survivors had new disability, which was widespread across all areas of functioning. Now, if you read through this for the interest of time, I'm going to let you guys read through this for yourself, but it's very interesting the kind of things you're seeing. Almost all of this, all the disabilities you're seeing have already been pointed out as possible injection side effects. But what's crazy is they're saying at 6 months, 43 of 160 died. 43, 26% of these people. So 26% of people in the study who had previously had COVID died before 6 months. Now, we just talked about the study revealing that long-haul COVID, where that was right here, was not actually what they were saying it was. So the only way this makes sense when you combine that information is that what we're seeing is people that had the injection, had the infection, then got the injection, then got sick. And all they're saying is, well, they and then died in 6 months because of all the crazy problems, the spike protein and everything else are leading to, especially when you previously had the infection. Here's what it says on the patients. Patients were eligible if they were adults that were either 18 or older with a positive laboratory PCR for SARS-CoV-2 admitted to an Australian ICU for over 24 hours. Patients were excluded if they declined to participate, were unable to communicate via translation service in English or were living overseas or were still in hospital at 6 months. Nowhere in there was whether or not they were injected. Why would that not be included? That's the most valid part of this. We know that that would change something. I mean, look, as I think it was Colleanne was saying in our interview, Colleanne Rodriguez, who we just recently interviewed, is saying that they, that I just lost my point. Shoot, what was it? Unable to communicate or translate. Dang it, that's crazy. In any case, she had a, dang it, that's frustrating. Anyway, since I brought her up, make sure you check out our recent interview with her, which was really, really sad and hard. It's important to see, though, as she gets told she's crazy while dealing with a vaccine adverse events. Anyway, the point here is there's no vaccination status included in this. And that is a huge, important part of this that very clearly could lead to the negative effects that we're seeing, and yet we're not even going to consider that. So take that again in conjunction with the idea that long haul is appearing to be an illusion based on the peer-reviewed science that they're not trusting. So what do you make of that? Hopefully you can come to your own conclusions about it and not be driven into a narrative by the mainstream media. Finally, we just showed this, and I'm just going to skip past it for the interest of time, is that, as it says, history will remember him as the first man in the world to announce a medical apartheid for his country, forcing unvaccinated Austrians over 12 years of age into a mandatory lockdown. Because we just reported this in part, and now since then, they've applied it to the whole country. The entire country of Austria is now on lockdown only if you're vaccinated, unvaccinated. Okay, so the point being the same way, after everything we just told you, after the fact that they're admitting that this does not stop the spread, that doesn't actually, now we're seeing waning in hospitalizations and deaths and higher viral load and everything else, nonetheless, they're still going, if you're the one without the injection that's potentially causing more harm, you're going to have to stay in your house. And what's that going to do? It's going to dramatically increase the decreasing health of the people who are unvaccinated, which will, if they can do it long enough, lead to its own self-fulfilling prophecy. But here we are in a situation where it doesn't make any logical sense or scientific sense for these people specifically to be locked down. It just doesn't. This is coercion. This is authoritarianism. An Australian medical doctor, a professor and vaccine developer himself, who just lost his position with the university due to not agreeing to take the approved injection. Think about that. So he is making his own, he's a developer of vaccines. How can you make him out to be anti-vax, which is what they're trying to do? He's saying no because he knows there's an issue. At the very least, he's concerned about the safety. Or at the very least, he's making up his own mind. And then they remove him from his position. There's no, this is politics, guys. These are people being removed because they're resisting. As Catherine Austin Fitz and everybody else talked about, which I'll play again in a second, they are clearly showing you this is more than health. This is about removing people who are willing to resist the authoritarian drive, the technocracy, the great reset, build back better. They're dividing you along whether or not you will comply. House Democrats introduced a bill to ban just unvaccinated people from flights, even though you can still spread it, catch it, and have higher viral load if you're vaccinated. And it's also leading to more problems, such as the spike protein spreading itself and on and on and on. But who cares about any of that? Even though most of the unvaccinated already have verifiable natural immunity, which lasts better, longer, works better. Yeah, but who cares about any of that? Just stop those dirty unvaxxers from going on the flights. Then we're going to see other things like the 44 members of that team that all spread it to each other and spread it to the 99% vaccinated group, some of which go in the hospital because Fauci said that's waning. But still do it to them only because it all makes sense, right? As Philip points out, absurdly, I can't believe this. He goes, and we're back to square one, the nursing homes. Isn't it 2 years a little early for a reboot? Look at what time is saying. We're back in square one. He's right. Eight residents of a nursing home in Connecticut have died during a coronavirus outbreak, while 89 residents and employees have tested positive for the disease, nursing home officials say. As we're driving people back into quarantine, isolation, it's just a recreating of the problem. It's starting all over again. This was why those numbers were so high in New York and where was the other location I'm blanking on now, in California. New York specifically had something like 3/4 of the numbers at the time. In all of the United States, we don't talk about these things anymore. Without that obvious number that we later found out was a criminal act, these numbers would have been dramatically lower. They don't care. They still point back at it as an absolute. Here we are again. People are dying in nursing homes because this is frustrating, guys, and all they can do is put it on you. Right. Even though the vast majority of the issues are coming from within hospitals, which multiple studies have already proven that the highest level of spread is happening there. All they're going to do is say it's your fault as this why this former FDA head is even speaking, why we care what he has to say right now, as he's an obvious sellout working for Pfizer. Well, Gottlieb speaks up and says, post Thanksgiving spike in coronavirus cases is coming. Right, they're just getting ahead of the narrative. They're going to tell you, no matter what actually happens, that it's all increased because you guys didn't listen. Only the unvaxxers, because we can all spread it, but somehow when unvaxxers do it, it's when that happens. Right, they're going to allow the vaccinated to get together. That's okay, you guys can do that. Even though they can all spread it, catch it, at the same rate, mind you, as the science has proven, higher viral load, in fact, so it increases it. All they're going to do is say, you unvaxxers who got together with your families are the reason this is still here. Another booster, another year, another lockdown, same thing. Oh, and it's not just them. It's here's Sky News saying the same thing about winter. I can't believe they didn't use dark winter. Shocking. Maybe they realize we can see how stupid that is. It says, in our hands, whether or not coronavirus restrictions will return over winter. Yeah, we know it's in your hands. What do you mean? What he wants you to think is it's in your hands. No, it's in their hands. They're going to do it anyway. I promise you there will be restrictions. And it's going to be because we're seeing cases rise because Thanksgiving. It's going to work perfectly the way they want it to. And it's going to be all because of the unvaxxers. Even though none of that is clearly affecting this. And really, it's about what they want to do anyway, which is going to be the lockdowns and restrictions, which lead to more cases and problems because of the higher testing and everything else. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. It continues forward. Bottom line is they're setting the narrative. You're going to be in problems after Christmas because you guys dared to get together with your families. And finally, what we expect. This was shared with me from, that's weird, COVID-1984, that the mandates are coming, no matter what. Even though they already said it couldn't happen and Biden just said, I'll do it anyway because freedom and democracy, right? But here it is. We find out a lottery is expected to be held to determine which federal appeals court will hear the challenges. So let's assume for a moment that this is going to be, you know, legitimate, and it won't be some, like every other election before this, manipulated drawing that gets them what they want. which I don't know why we would trust them to do their own drawing. It's silly. But the Fifth Circuit ruling blocking the mandate will be overtaken by the Federal Appeals Court shows in the lottery. Here's the information. A lottery could determine the fate of Biden's vaccine rule for 84 million workers. Realize right now that, I mean, I don't know why this is allowed to continue. A huge portion of states and, I mean, people are suing them from every direction about this, and we're acting like it's a bunch of fringe people in their corner. I keep telling you guys, you're the majority. 40% of the world's injected. You are the worldwide majority. Recognize that. They're desperate to drive this in, and even their own government is pushing back against it, which to a degree, I'm skeptical is part of the illusion, but it doesn't matter in this one point because we should be pushing back against this. Just don't throw in with the next group that's going to allow you to still use the passports for different reasons. But here is the lottery that could determine the fate of the mandate. It says, in a fight over who has the authority to tell companies what to do when it comes to COVID-19 and workplace safety, a random drawing could play a big role in which side prevails. Did you see what that says? The fight over who has the authority to tell companies what to do when it comes to vaccine injection mandates? Do you see how dramatically that shifted directions? Remember when we was like moments ago that Paskey and Biden were acting like that wasn't their place and we would never do that in this country? And now we're going, yeah, but who now we're fighting over whose authority it is. What do you mean whose authority? Why in the world does the government think they have the authority to tell businesses that they have to inject people with injections? That's never been acceptable and it's still not. But now we're battling. We've just jumped over that argument and now we're deciding who has the authority, which will then be cemented going forward forever. Oh, and it's going to be based on a lottery. Great. A lottery is expected to be held in this week to determine which federal appeals court will hear the numerous challenges on the OSHA emergency rule, which is set for January 4th deadline. 84 million people. Under federal law, when multiple lawsuits involving one or more common questions of fact are filed in separate courts, which is what's happening, the petitions are consolidated and heard by one court chosen at random. Now, I didn't know that until I read through this. But it does appear to be the correct, that's accurate. But here's what I don't trust, that it will be chosen at random. As always, if you think for one second that these technocrats, these elitists, would ever, ever, ever allow their future plans to hinge on some kind of election, whether presidential or otherwise, you're a child. I mean, really mean that from the bottom of my heart. It's crazy that we can pretend that's what's happening. But right now, recognize this to me, and in their minds, I can promise you, is more important than the next presidential election. This is the, well, I take that back, because I don't know whether or not this could end up being the passports and the infrastructure, I think, is the point. So I do take that back. But that direction, I feel, is more important to them than anything. And this right here may be important enough to manipulate, to drive in right now, but we'll see what happens. At the end of the day, I don't believe for a second this is going to be left to chance. I just don't. Challenges to the OSHA rule have been filed in all, and this is crazy, almost every U.S. circuit court, almost every court across the country, there's been a challenge to this rule. But let's pretend like it's a bunch of fringe conspiracy theorists, right? And each one of those courts will get one entry. Even though some have multiple, I guess that's normal, blah, blah, blah. It says the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals based on in New Orleans, which temporarily halted the OSHA rule on November 6th and then reaffirmed that decision on November 12th, is known as one of the most conservative in the country. The three-judge panel that stayed the OSHA rule is the same panel that allowed Texas's strict anti-abortion law to stand in September. So the point is they want to frame this as fringe conspiracy theorists on the conservative side. Even though these are judges, like all the other judges, these are politicians, like all the other politicians, but just because they're trying to play the two-party system against you, they want you guys to think on the left that they're a bunch of anti-science crazy people, even though a lot of them are scientists, a lot of them have credentials. Like it's just so childish that you get lost in this two-party paradigm, and the right does the same thing to the left. It's not that simple, guys. It says, however, its ruling on the vaccine or test rule will be overtaken by decisions issued by the federal appeals court chosen in the lottery. Now, of course, they point out that it's possible that very court could end up being the one that's chosen. Do I think that's going to happen? I really, really don't. But it says, the Biden administration has urged companies to prepare to comply with the OSHA rule while these various petitions are winding through the courts. How does that make sense? This is they've done this every time. Biden comes out and says, start getting ready to inject those kids because we know it's going to happen, clearly. Why would you tell them to prepare to comply with this, which means getting things in the process, which means wasting time, wasting resources and money, if it's not decided yet? Because that's the plan, guys. If the court that wins the lottery lifts the stay, companies will need to quickly determine which of their employees are vaccinated and which are not. Which, by the way, I thought was a violation of a lot of things, but I guess not anymore. And enforce the mask mandate for the unvaccinated starting December 6th, which we're still stuck on this absurd mask ridiculousness, even as people like Bill Maher, who, by the way, you know, is clearly on one side in the two-party paradigm, who's will tell you it's an amulet that's making you think, you guys, it's childish to think this is the case. That even on the left in the two-party illusion, there are people that are clearly going, look, the science does not back this up, and it never has. And here we are. It is simply a political point. But they're going to force it in, guys. And it's going to be based on a lottery. Now, a couple quick points to wrap it up here. We need to see how this is going to possibly evolve, and I keep pointing this out, and I've made the point on natural immunity, that just because we see that happening, that it looks like a win that we'll get natural immunity kind of a thing, recognize that that's just, in my opinion, a sidestep into the same passport infrastructure, which somebody was saying that's not the right term for it, but you know, I think it makes the most sense. As it says here, though, a big win for New York City educators who applied for religious exemptions to vaccination, which it's a win, I would argue. They NYC teachers open a door to justice in religious exemption to vaccinations. Now, that's a positive, but if it ends up being the same kind of thing, which, again, we've always known they have religious exemptions, and it's only in this weird clown world that suddenly people who have no credentials to qualify whether they can to be able to dictate who and who isn't believing in their religion. Right? We're talking about people that run a hospital and yet somehow they're able to research whether you believe in God. I mean, good God, this is silly. But the point is that this is how this, if you get to a point where they go, okay, you were going to give you back that thing we always known was there, and then make that another caveat that you can say, well, here's my exemption, but you still have to prove that on your passport. It's the same thing. So we need to be very vigilant against that possible, I think, coming risk. Now, remember what Catherine Austin Fitz said. And what RFK Jr.'s, actually, I'll play, that's not the same clip. I'll play that after this one. I'm going to play that clip for you again. We'll see where we are. Past 3 hours. All right, it's been a while since I've had this long of a show. I'm almost done. I want to play this again for those that saw in the beginning. It's important to play this because this needs to resonate with people. This clip is important. Both of them are. And then we'll finish this up. Oh, actually, I forgot it's right here.
Plague laws, this is not the first time in history that plague laws have been used to centralize control. Control of transportation, control of labor, control of banking and bank accounts, control of all the different kinds of capital that make up human civilization. But the COVID laws are particularly draconian in the history of plague laws because not only do they control labor, transportation, banking, but now with advances in digital technology, we're looking at complete control through the banking system of 100% of all assets, ultimately. So what happens here? For many, many years, most of us have grown up in a world in the Western democracies where we have a balance of power between the bankers and the people. The central bankers control monetary policy, and the people vote for an electorate that controls fiscal policy. Now what we're watching with COVID laws all around the world is the central bankers moving in and exercising essentially a coup d'etat where they take control of fiscal policy as well. And again, with the advances in digital technology, vaccine passports will not be about health. Vaccine passports are part of a financial transaction control grid that will absolutely end human liberty in the West. For many years, I have fought and written against central control of the financial system. We've centralized more and more capital, more and more control. And we've done it with tactics called divide and conquer. And we've all experienced many different divide and conquer tactics, men against women, black against white, But now we have a new one called the vaccinated versus the non-vaccinated. Because if you're going to centralize control of every aspect of people's lives and literally strip them of their assets and their property rights, you need a new, more venal divide and conquer. And we can't let that happen.
You think about this. I got expelled from Instagram because of vaccine misinformation. But Instagram and Facebook cannot point to one single erroneous statement that I ever made. Everything we post is vetted. It is sourced and cited to government databases or peer-reviewed publications. When they use the term vaccine misinformation, they are using it as a euphemism for any statement that departs from official government policies and pharmaceutical industry profit-taking. It has nothing to do whether it's true or false. It only has to do with what the political implications are. And who is doing this censorship? It's government officials in league with Bill Gates, with Larry Ellison, with Mark Zuckerberg, with Sergey Brin from Google, and with all of these internet titans. They have engineered not only the destruction of our democracy and our civil rights, but they have engineered the biggest shift of wealth in human history. $3.8 trillion from working people to these handful of billionaires, many of them from Silicon Valley. This pandemic has impoverished the world and created 500 new billionaires. And those are the people who are strip mining our economies and making themselves rich. And is it a coincidence that these are the same people who are censoring criticism of the government policies that are bringing them trillions of dollars?
Exactly.
People aren't stupid. We can see what's happening. We can ask the question, cui bono? And the answer is the people who are benefiting are the people who are squeezing away our constitutional rights and engineering the destruction of democracy worldwide.
Yep, pretty clear. Well said, right? I mean, I really want that picture to develop. This, I mean, obviously health is a huge part of this, but it's not, it does not appear to be the real end goal. It is a means to an end. As I keep bringing up, and I'm going to talk about with Derek probably in a near upcoming show, that parasite stress theory, that really Derek has been the only one to really break that story out, is very obvious that they realize that using a virus or a parasite or any kind of a threat in that regard, which virus is one of the things they discussed and researched, using that is the one of the only clear ways to drive people using fear into accepting an authoritarian state. Multiple studies found that, and they said even in the study, it doesn't even need to be a real virus. Just the threat alone will drive people to tell on their neighbors, to accept an authoritarian rule because of fear. Here we are. So let's play what RFK Jr. had to say here in his recent speech. This is another important one.
And all of these rights that were taken away from us, these governments said it was temporary, it was only 2 weeks, it would be over. In truth, you can all see what's happening. They are taking those rights and they will never give them back unless we make them. And the Green Pass is their coup d'etat. The Green Pass is how they consolidate their power over your lives.
Exactly.
The Green Pass is not a public health measure. It is a tool for totalitarian control of your transportation, your bank account, your movements, every aspect of your life. And this is not a new idea. This is the same idea that they used in Germany in 1937. They issued a pass for people that they wanted to control. And when the South African apartheid government wanted to control the black population of South Africa, what was the most important thing they did? They issued a green pass.
Exactly.
And I want you to ask all the people in the journalists and press who are here today, if the green pass is about public health, why is it being issued not by the health ministry? It's being issued by the financial ministry. Do they think that we are stupid? Because this is a way to control your money.
Very clearly. Very clearly. And I think they're nailing it, both of them. Like, exactly. We've been circling around a lot of these points, both Whitney and I, in our different research and our show and her extensive work that you really need to dive into if you haven't looked at yet. But this is where it leads to next. Right. So exactly what they both just laid out is what this leads to. Biden signs infrastructure bill into law. The bipartisan bill that creates your new normal. Or rather, solidifies the normal that you're living now into your future forever and creates the build back better, great reset, technocratic gulag that you're going to live in. Right. You could think I'm being hyperbolic. You can think I'm being conspiracy theorist. The reality is they're not hiding it. This is building toward exactly what they're telling you, building back better. Now, if you believe that that is in your best interest, then you're not paying attention. Finally, in the UK, armed police will patrol Christmas markets in the UK so shoppers feel safe. Right. In a place that's pretty much, you know, historically known for not being the place that's going to be armed police all over the place, like the US, which they, you know, make fun of the US. Well, now weird that it's starting there to make them feel safe. Isn't that the opposite of what most people in the UK would argue? It says we didn't need these before. What has changed to make Britain so violent and dangerous? Oh, that's right. Just in, UK terror threat level raised to severe after their Cobra meeting. Great, so terror threat in the middle of the pandemic. I wonder why that's connected, and I wonder why that has anything to do with keeping you more safe during the pandemic. Ah, because the terror level threat was raised to severe after their meeting on the Liverpool hospital bomb blast. Right. I'll let you guys read into that as you see fit. What we do need to realize here is that it's obvious that these things are one in the same, that they're talking about, like, I mean, to the point, there's been all sorts of these kind of things throughout history. Why weren't they doing them then? Why now? This is the authoritarian drive. They're justifying this push forward that has nothing to do with what you think your country's all about. There's something larger than this happening. And this is about keeping people in line. I think just like we, guys, this is not going to stop until we stand up and stop it. We need to see that. This is sprinting forward. Now, whether this hospital bomb was just an app random thing that they're used, or this is something that was planned, or however you want to look at this. If you think that those kind of things have never been planned and I'm a conspiracy theorist, then you are not paying attention. This stuff is verifiably real. Look at James Corbett's work, which will show you 1,000 of these things where they've been caught, or the FBI has been caught being involved with bombs that they planted under the guise of stopping terrorists that they didn't get to, or on and on and on. New York Times itself wrote an article a long time ago that argued that the FBI was involved with something like 90-something percent of the very terrorist acts they claim they stop. That was back when they were still allowed to talk about things like that. Now it's all fake news because everything's on the side of we're good and you're bad. We have to see where this is driving to. All of this is about enforcing the direction. And this is where it's going. It's already starting all around the world, and it's doing it with, they're doing it with your money. While you can't feed your family and pay your bills. We need to see where it's going. Now, I'm going to leave you with some more coming your way. Just to let you know that we have more stuff coming left and right. Taylor Hudak is working on a great new interview right now. Derek Brose has a couple new articles coming your way. Whitney Webb and I were just talking about a new interview coming our way. Just, I mean, so you guys know that she's pregnant with a new child. And so she's working on her articles for Unlimited Hangout, and there's limited time she has with what's going on. So we're trying to focus on having her come on some interviews and stuff. Cause the last thing I want is to put more work on her when this is going on. So more coming though, plenty more coming your way. On top of Robert Inlakesh having multiple articles that I need to get up soon, just wrote a new one about some massive things going on. There's plenty coming your way, guys. So continue to spread the information. Continue to check thelastamericanvagabond.com and everything else that we're talking about today, because it's all there in front of you. The reality has never been more obvious. We know that. You feel it in your heart. It's time to help other people see the same. Thank you for being here today. I'm going to leave you with a video. People keep asking me to play my song again. I'll do that. I don't want to do it every single time, but I will play it again as time goes forward. For those in the mods in the chat and everywhere else, please drop my link in there from SoundCloud. And I am working on getting an actual video done for I think somebody reached out just recently about making a music video. So we're going to work on that as well. But I will leave you with another song that I meant to play the other day, and I realized I didn't have the link. So I'm going to leave you with this new song. I believe it's called I Will Not Comply. It's a good one. There's plenty out there fighting for you guys, and you are the majority. Don't forget that. I love you all. As always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.
Not comply with the institutions, sick illusion. No, it won't be televised. Welcome to the revolution. We will not comply.
Revolution won't be televised. Government been telling lies. If you're not with us, you better step aside. Witnessing a genocide, everything is centralized. The food that we consume, and they spraying it out with pesticides. Easily identify the sheep and the snake, the real and the fake, giving us a reason to pray. I'ma make my own choices, a voice for the voiceless. They trying to destroy us, avoiding the poison. It's all pointless if you don't have a purpose. If you read the verses, you'll know who we versing. Government can't tell you what your worth is. Look deeper than the surface. They don't even want you researching or asking questions. We all being tested. Shut your mouth and comply, that's the message. Want you depressed on prescriptions that mess with your head. Got you stressing, suppressing expression.
We will not comply with the institutions. Sick illusion, no, it won't be televised. Welcome to the revolution. We will not comply.
Power and control, that's their number one goal. All my friends turn to foes, look how easily they fold. Even Nazis say they were doing what they told. Walking down this road all alone in the cold, but my soul never sold. I'm exposing the clones, God has chosen this role. All of those who oppose want me hopeless and broke, like I'm Noah on boats. I'm just trying to tell them all about the flood. I can feel it in my bones, I can feel it in my blood. Man, I came up out of mud, only God is my judge. I don't listen to these politicians, they the real thugs. Won't comply with the lies, they disguise it in science. They want you compliant, the media's biased. These corporate giants are capitalizing on us by dividing, but I'll keep on fighting.
We will not comply with the institutions. Sick illusion, no, it won't be televised. Welcome to the revolution. They're trying to dump.